Hello everybody, I'm Chris.
I'm Craig.
I'm known as Jack.
You are known as Jack, the FUD who's just only this minute put off the phone.
I know.
Yeah.
It's the internet age.
Are you Jack of Mog Thorol?
That's a clue.
By all the Jacks in Aragorn. We're watching The Lord of the Rings, the Ralph Bakshi 1978 version, or the proper version, as nobody including me calls it.
I'm just going to put on voices because I can't be fucked with The Lord of the Rings.
Are you not into Lord of the Rings at all?
Not really, no.
We don't denigrate other people's interests in the TV cream.
No, I wasn't going to do that. No. I'm just saying I can't be fucked by it.
Alright.
Anyway.
That's nice though, I like that.
This is it just started now after the initial title.
Yeah.
Which has lovely music. And is this nice image of as if you're watching something unfolding on a book.
On a tapestry,
Is very nice. And all of which, all of this of which is taken by the Jackson film.
And I'd also say Francis Ford Dracula's Bram Stoker's Coppola makes all that sort of stuff as well.
But all of this stuff, a lot of the visual renderings of the story representations are clearly influenced the Jackson film. And the Jackson film chooses not to recognise.
Well, this is interesting, isn't it? Because he has and he hasn't.
Yeah.
And Ralph Bakshi, who seems to be quite... I was reading about him today. Seems to be quite a disputatious fellow.
Oh, he's a great guy.
Really?
He seems to have kind of called out Mr. Jackson on this. Sorry, Sir Peter on this.
Because all of that stuff with him, all holding them up at the start, because all of the stuff about, you know, actually starting it and representing them all holding the rings up and all that, and none of that, of course, is in the book. You're just told about all of that a bit later on.
So is this passed into canon then?
Yeah.
It's weird when they do that sort of shit. The Coen brothers did that around True Grit. They said, oh, no, we're going back to the book. We've never seen the first film. And it's pointed out that the depiction of Rooster Cogburn with the eye patch and all that all comes from the first film. None of it's from the book.
But they're quite banned for that, the Coen brothers, because they also did that. I'm sure we've talked about this before. They also did that thing about when they remade The Lady Killers.
Did they?
And they said, and in fact, one of them even said, well, that's impossible. I mean, I've never even seen the Lady Killers. There's just two things there. Mm-hmm. One, first of all, obviously you have, because of the way the film's made, like, for example, the funny teeth.
Yeah.
And second of all, why would you not have seen the Lady Killers?
Exactly.
It's a fucking stupid thing
to see. If not, then you shouldn't be allowed to be in a fucking camera.
No, that's that sort of thing with people trumpeting their ignorance.
So all this preamble that we have in the film here about the rings and all that stuff, how do they cover that off in the book then? Is that...
That's about 200 pages worth, isn't it?
No, it's... this is all exposition that goes on later on that's transferred to the start of this.
Is that a good choice?
Yeah, I think it works really well.
Mm.
Because you'll notice, especially towards the end of this, because of a visual storytelling technique called running out of money.
Yes.
They completely batter through the end of this. And they don't fucking hang about. I mean, it really starts to lick along. But the idea of having this little exposition sequence at the start, they do in all three of the Lord of the Rings films. And this part here of Smeagol going crackers and turning into Gollum is the opening sequence in the third film, the Return of the King. But all of that, you know, the ring bouncing down and all that, it's all from this.
Mm.
Now, we have to put this into context in terms of the other productions, because I think Jackson also credits the BBC adaptation, which is after this.
Wow, okay. I thought it was
because it's about 1980.
Right, okay.
But which is epic. I mean, it really is epic in every sense.
Mm-hmm.
But there had been a Hobbit adaptation in the 60s, which is where I think probably the Gollum voice comes from, not this.
Now, I remember David Ward, is that his name, the actor? In those Lindsay Anderson films, doing that same sort of Gollum voice on Jack and Ori when he did The Hobbit.
There you go.
Yeah.
So
I think the Lord of the Rings radio series has perhaps the best ever cast.
Oh, it's an amazing cast.
Because we're having a good
one. I like it.
Sorry, can you remember who's in it? Come, this is your bag.
Oh, I mean, it's literally.
Even the small parts are played by significant people, aren't they? I can't remember any of them.
I think up front we need to talk about our attitudes towards Tolkien.
Mm.
Right.
and then in 3 hours' time, Chris will stop.
Yeah.
And the rest of us will chip in.
Why don't you go first?
And then it's only 2 hours and 7 minutes.
Okay, so nothing against it. Mm-hmm. We'd never decry it.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen all the films at the cinema and enjoyed them enormously. For once, it's fine.
Yep.
It's not my kind of... I'm a big science fiction fan. Mm-hmm. I have lots of other enthusiasms. Fantasy as a genre really isn't one of them terribly much.
Why is that thing?
It just generally speaking doesn't speak to me very much. You know, I think the names become a problem.
Yeah.
And I remember watching the Jackson films and them talk about how visually they were so amazing. And some of the parts are, of course, but also when you got into... What is it? Is it what's the bit where all the elves live?
Rivendell.
Rivendell just looked like a sort of 70s... prog rock album to me. I never thought it looked particularly interesting. So it's just not, it's not that I think it's bad or anything like that at all. I read The Hobbit. I think I got about halfway through The Lord of the Rings.
Well, it's interesting, I suppose, that you say that the Rivendell to you looked like a prog rock album, because so many prog rock albums
come from that, yeah.
Filch artwork from illustrated copies of Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
So is there a sort of recognised Lord of the Rings artist in the way that Sidney Paget is Sherlock Holmes?
Well, I don't really know, because it's probably apparent to listeners by now that I'm a Tolkien fanatic.
Mm-hmm.
If only because they might have picked it up from the denigrating tone of Craig.
I don't think so at all. I think I was giving you your due credit.
We'll see how that holds up as we go. No, because I'm a bit of a Tolkien purist.
Mm-hmm.
Because I follow Tolkien's own belief that what matters is the books. He didn't even want to write the addendums to the books that gave more information on elves and language and dwarves, mm-hmm. and things. He just wanted to write the books, and that's it.
Is that right?
Nothing else. He was just interested in telling the stories. And of course, when the clamour began, we want more, he resisted it fiercely. And it's Christopher Tolkien, of course, who put together all of the works that made up The Silmarillion and all these sorts of things.
Because they're relatively modern novels, aren't they? They're
1950s. Oh, yeah, the 50s. Yeah. Mm. Although this is when my geekery becomes apparent.
Are you going to talk about the world that they inhabit is really the post-war 1914-18?
No, but that is when he first wrote it.
Oh, really? Right.
The first thing he wrote was a story called Tuor and His Approach to Gondolin, which was written basically in the trenches.
Yeah.
He was a captain, I think.
Was he?
In the First World War, yeah. He
got a whiff of gas, wasn't it?
Yeah. He got a whiff of gas. But he wrote it for... it was very close quarters they lived in.
Yeah.
But in any case, he wrote that for his own amusement and the amusement of his sort of people that were around him.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, put it away and then left.
And so was it sort of serialised then?
No.
Was he writing a bit so then he could then read it to his pals?
Yeah, because then he would, later on he was in, which actually does sound quite hateful, The Inklings.
Yeah, with C.S. Lewis.
With that cunt C.S. Lewis.
Who's
story? Cunt?
No. Do you know what
it says? No.
Clive.
Oh, there you go.
There you are.
Sorry, I thought you were going to say it was Carthage or something.
Clive Lewis.
What was he wasn't called that, though, was he? Jack, he was known as his friends.
Right, but his name's Clive.
Yeah.
So that was the question I was going to ask
friends,
you.
But they were close friends, weren't they?
Yeah. Question I wanted to ask you, which
all of C.S. Lewis's books are just about, you know, if you do anything remotely grown up, you'll be slaughtered.
Yeah.
Well, basically, he's a DUP member with a fountain pen.
Cambridge Central.
Yeah,
or Oxford absolutely. South.
Do you know when C.S. Lewis died?
Yes, this is interesting. He died on the same day as Aldous Huxley.
Uh-huh.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And
nobody'd seen
John F. Kennedy.
Correct.
Yeah.
And what happened the day after?
The first Doctor Who was on.
Boom. There you go.
LBG had a massive wank.
That's it. LBG had a massive wank and then watched Doctor Who.
Lady Brothers up all night.
So here's a question for the hardcore Tolkien fan then.
Mm-hmm. He's literally end of Dr. Strangelove. Yay!
She looked like Gollum, but
so I don't know if you'll know this.
Uh huh.
What does J.R.R. stand for? Him?
Oh yeah, I think I know that.
Jonathan Rand Rule.
Yeah. I know someone who's. I met someone. It's one of those things, but I think tendentious. I met someone when I was at university whose father who'd been a professor at Edinburgh University, mm-hmm. was taught by Tolkien. Yeah. Oh,
really?
Yeah, he was an old English expert.
Wow. So the reason he published it, because he'd worked for years on the OED, he was a professor of Anglo-Saxon, I think.
And philology or something like that, yeah.
And he eventually published it because, and there's a letter to George Unwin, the publisher, his publisher, saying he was coming up for retirement and he needed to make sure he had enough money to live on.
I was going to actually make a joke and say, was his pension fucked?
That's exactly what right, okay. There's no money, particularly, and
no, sure.
He wasn't going to have very much to live on, and so... So he wrote this shit!
So hang on, so he wrote The Lord of the Rings during the war?
No, that's not how it works.
He began creating the world.
He began creating bits of it. Tuor in his Coming to Gondolin isn't in Lord of the Rings. It's a random chapter that then crops up in the Silmarillion.
So is this the earliest written stuff in the Silmarillion?
Yes.
Okay.
And see, all this I like. This is a typical English graduate. I don't actually like the text. I like everything around the text. Yeah.
Well, it's like me in sport. I don't like sport. Yeah. But I like documentaries about sport.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's the mythos.
Yeah. So he realised that he had to write something that would be a narrative that, you know, could be sold, basically.
So he was just sort of describing the world and the characters then, initially, is that right?
He had an idea.
In the Silmarillion? So there's
there's a plot, and there's a plot.
Was a lot of it also about just his love of making up languages?
Well, yeah, because the sort of disappointing reading of the Lord of the Rings, and I say disappointing because it's a bit too highfalutin, is that it's actually a history of languages. Mm. It's a history of the development of languages. Elvish and Dwarvish and whatever. And you can trace the migration of the different races from the Far West into Middle Earth and all this sort of thing through the development of the languages, but it's a bit much.
Yeah. And does anybody have a tankard of foaming mead in any of his works?
No, well, neither do they have.
Interestingly,
the foaming
stuff.
Ale.
Yeah, the foaming ale.
Interestingly,
pints of the black stuff.
But that kind of touches on actually the things that I rather liked about it.
Quite a lot of ale though in the Prancing Pony.
I remember getting the Lord of the Rings in that sort of 80s edition with the black border, the big thick one, and the castle in the front.
Yep.
When I would be about 14 or so for my Christmas, I'm reading it at Christmas time on holiday in the house. Nothing much to do that time of the year. We all like it big time.
Yep.
And to some extent, I think my problems with a lot of it is that, you see, when he's in the house and he's got his fire going and he's got his pipe, I love that. I think, I would never go away from that.
See, that's the whole point.
Yeah.
Because, more overtly in The Hobbit,
yeah,
he has to be dragged out of the place. But the point is that there's something in them, in Frodo and Bilbo, that makes them want to go and see the rest of the world. The nice thing about it is that the two of them almost immediately start to regret it.
Yeah.
None of them are great heroes who stride across the landscape. And, of course, the great character in Lord of the Rings, if you have any sense, is Sam, who doesn't even want to... I mean, he quite wants to see elves, but that's it. And he only goes because his boss is going, and he thinks he better go, and he's slightly proprietorial.
So it's quite class-focused, isn't it, do you think?
Yeah, it's one of the things you've
got... A lot's been made of that, hasn't it?
It's one of the things you've got to get around, but I think there's an undercut to it. Because Tolkien wasn't particularly posh. I mean, he was middle class, but he wasn't posh.
He was from Birmingham as well.
He was from Birmingham. We'll get back to the relevance of coming from Birmingham later. But, I mean, it's like, if you look at the nine, the fellowship, Legolas is a prince, Gimli is the cousin of Balin, who's Lord of Moria and all these sort of things. You know, Aragorn... I see you snickering. Aragorn is the king, is the exiled king, which is obviously the
one that returns.
Yeah, you know, Merry and Pippin. One's the relations of the Took family were a big old family. One's the master, you know, the son of the Master of Buckland. You know, they're all aristocracy one way or the other. Bilbo and Frodo aren't exactly, although Frodo's a Took on his mother's side. Bilbo's just well off. The point is, nobody's common.
Yeah.
Except Sam.
Yeah.
And when they get to the very, very end, and this is what excuses it, I think. And we might as well talk about this, because this film doesn't get to the very, very end. When you get to the very, very end and you have to cast the ring back into the mountain, the only person that can do it is Sam. and the only, and he has to carry him up the mountain and all this sort of thing. So basically, the ones who actually have to do the work and who have sort of fortitude and a sort of inner strength is Sam, and he's the scruff.
Middle class wankers just hang about.
The toffs can only go so far.
So it's a Marxist book, really.
Well, I think there's a strong Marxist reading of him, but what there really is, but I think that's a bit disputatious. But what there really is, it's a very strong reflection of the First World War.
Yeah.
Because the generals and the captains even can only take you so far, but it needs the ordinary common soldiers to actually get across the line.
And so is it a condemnation of the officer class then, or not?
No, no, not at all.
I don't think it's...
It's not angry in any sense, except that it's angry against modernity, and it doesn't like industry. Because everybody who's even remotely connected with industry, for example, Saruman eventually in the book is, you know, and Treebeard says he has a mind of wheels and tries to have a sort of, and then, which is not even the chapter, the Scouring of the Shire, which is when they come back, which is not in the books, because when they come back and the Shire's fucked.
Yeah.
And it's basically
quite a sad ending, then.
Well, no, because it's sort of been subject to a fascist takeover, which they then sought. But, you know, Ted Sandeman has turned his mill into, because Saruman's turned up secretly, has turned it into a sort of industrial plant, and all of that has to be wiped away and washed away. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit retrograde in that sense, but it's not angry about people particularly.
Now, we've started off a number of threads here, and I want to come back to one of them.
We haven't actually talked about this.
No, not at all, but we'll talk about it. We've got two
quite
hours.
There's quite a lot of it.
Yeah, we've got 2 hours. So what I wanted to get to the bottom of was the chronology of what he...
To be fair to the world, this is about an hour into the Peter Jackson film.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And this is what I was saying, that they don't fucking hang about, because they don't get to hang about.
Yeah.
And this... See the rendering of the Black Riders? Uh-huh. I think... Now, it's different, you'll notice, from the film, where they're quite strong and powerful.
Yeah,
and
he looks like a bit sort of disabled. But this is sort of kind of...
But this is creepy as fuck.
It's like, and you can't quite move right.
And they also, though the film does copy the sort of snuffling away, it's in the book, but it's very overt in this.
So, Silmarillion. So he wrote stuff that ended up in Silmarillion first.
Gaily!
Yeah, effectively, yeah.
And then, what came next? What came next?
The Hobbit.
The Hobbit. Okay, and then, but was The Hobbit published before Lord of the Rings?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Right, because The Hobbit 54. Was, and because The Hobbit was quite explicitly a kid's book.
Well,
or
it was,
is it?
Marketed as a kid's book.
Uh-huh.
And it's a kid's book until they get to the wood in the middle.
Right, and the spunk starts flying.
That's when the web start flying.
The Dark Riders mean something entirely different in that book.
Then there's a massive tonal change, and it goes really dark. But certainly for the start of it's all like, there's a hole in the ground, there's a hobbit and all that sort of stuff.
Chapter 32, stab the cunt.
Well, it's like chapter 31 is fold your all in the woods. Chapter 32 is ram the steel up the cunty ass.
And so then Lord of the Rings is the last thing he wrote.
Well, it's the last narrative thing that he wrote. I mean, and amongst it all, there's
bit jazz.
There's things like Farmer Giles of Ham and things like that. I mean, he wrote little short stories and bits and pieces. He did the...
Where does Tom Bombadil fit into all this?
Ah, well, we'll come back to...
Because he's got a great name.
We'll come back to Tom Bombadil. He did an album with Donald Swan.
Did he?
Yeah, because there's a lot of songs.
Tolkien and Swan.
There's a... Tolkien and Swan, yeah. Together at glass.
Wow. Okay.
There's a lot of songs in the book, uh-huh, but they're rendered as poetry.
Right.
And Donald Swan set them to music and whatever. And
is that like
they're very beautiful? Some of them, not all of them. It has
is that
to
like
be
the
said.
Work of
ding-de-ling-de-ling. Have you ever tried to kill a dwarf in a wood?
Is that like Mike Reed's work with John Betjeman's poetry? Have you heard that?
Yes, I have. Yeah.
Miss Joan Hunterdon, Miss Joan Hunterdon, furnished and burnished by older shot son. You had that one?
I have, yeah.
What strenuous singles we played after tea. We in the tournament, you against me. Yeah.
Wonderful. Hey. Okay. What was your first ever?
That's obviously what was running in Betjeman's head.
Yeah. Yeah. He was thinking, what? I need a
he's someone.
It. Yeah. I need the voice of someone who can also perhaps do a calypso as well at a later period.
Oh. Well, at the sign of the prancing pony. Yeah. Oh, no, we have to talk about this, I think, which is the rotoscoping.
The rotoscoping, yeah.
Craig, tell us what rotoscoping is.
Basically, you film stuff on a stage, uh-huh. then animate over it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Ralph Bakshi was asked about the rotoscoping and basically accused of cheating. The point that he made is everybody rotoscoped until the advent of computer animation. Mm-hmm. And he was interviewed in the sort of the early 90s, and he pointed out, which apparently is completely correct, that Walt Disney used rotoscoping extensively in Snow White, and if he hadn't, they would still have been animating it in the early 90s.
Yeah.
So, but you know the rotoscoping here where it does look just very much like film. Mm-hmm. Is it quicker to rotoscope by that, though?
Apparently, yeah. I think it's interesting that there was actually a credit for a director of photography earlier on, so you can see that's been properly shot. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. On a sound stage, probably. I don't know if they how much of backdrops. So it's just almost like sort of green screen they would be doing. I think it's a black screen they did on the rotoscoping.
But I think it lends a real air of creepiness to it.
One thing that's interesting about it is it's such a mix of animation styles.
It is
that in one way you think, well, that's kind of not how you're supposed to do animation, but in such a diverse universe or world, it actually is quite. You know, it's a defensible approach to doing it, I would say.
Yeah, I think so. But I think it also reflects the tonal shifts in it. Because you can go from, you know, in the book you'll go from like this, you know, the start of this story, the start of this section in Bree, The Sign of the Prancing Pony, where it's all about, you know, getting a comfy bed and buying beer and having a song and falling down. And then when he accidentally puts the ring on, it massively shifts. Uh-huh. To they're all going to be murdered in their beds, literally.
Is that Sam?
No, it's Mary or Pippin.
Mary or Pippin looks a bit like a girl. Yeah. Or like Little Jimmy Cranky.
Well, they're posh.
Now, why are we doing this?
Is that Aragorn there?
Yep. John Hurt.
John Hurt. The Ford. The Ford Probe. Listen, I was getting told today by our friend David, and I haven't thought about this before. Because occasionally, because I have a son, I've come across this thing about having to go to a
friend. Occasionally, you've got a son.
Because I have a son, I've occasionally to have come across a thing about going to a fancy dress party. Mm-hmm. There's one a year that is a sort of fundraising thing for a club he used to be in.
David goes to a fancy dress
party? No. My son does. We had to go to it at Halloween, and I was dressed up this year with my good lady wife as...
the guy as Guy Garvey.
No, for a change, I didn't go out as dark as Guy Garvey. I went as what they called what's her name? She flies. She's the nanny. It's one of the best films ever made. And her name's going out of my head. Mary Poppins and
Dick Van Dyke.
So I was Dick. Anyway, however, David came up with a good idea today. One of his friends did once, which is a brilliant tip for a fancy dress party. Mm-hmm. Go as the Elephant Man. Because you have to put on a cape.
Uh-huh. And put the hood on.
Put a pillow over your head, a pillow case with a hole in it.
And just carry a picture of Hannah Gordon.
Well, you just stick a big hat on. Then when someone buys you a drink, you go, "You've all been very kind to me." And that's it. You get away with it for the whole night.
Ah, the Elephant Man. The finest.
It serves my sweaty head problem as well.
The finest film ever made about Hannah Gordon.
I know, it's a great film about Hannah Gordon.
No, we didn't ask the question.
You were marvellous in joint account.
Peter Egan.
How's Peter Egan?
I do miss you in the Safeways adverts.
Peter Egan likes animals. He'd be kind to me.
Peter Egan fucking loves animals.
Loves the animals.
Peter Egan started following me on Twitter and I followed him. But eventually I had to stop following him because I was getting fed up hearing about dogs that have got bronchitis and stuff.
You just kept hearing about badgers with sore heads.
It's rotten.
Yeah.
And I'm really sorry for that badger.
Beers with hepatitis.
Oh, come on, Peter.
With
ever decreasing interest. I was definitely getting to the stage of the polite like.
Mm.
Yep.
Now, mine is more that I don't understand, like, that's the like I usually do.
Now, so when are you on Tolkien, Jack?
That's a good segue. So, why are we doing this?
Why are we doing this?
Well, we're doing it because it's been requested of us.
Oh, yeah, people asked for us to do it. Fools, I bet the fucking thing twice about it now.
So, there's two people asked for this.
Mm-hmm.
One's Russell Hellman.
Russell who?
Hellman.
Now, do we know him from the past?
He's lived in the past.
The mayonnaise or the imp?
That's it. What was you had a better line earlier on, Chris, on that.
He's a bit
from Russell Hillman.
He's a bit of an imp.
Uh-huh.
And his mother's a mink.
Hey!
Like that. So I asked Russell, thank you. So first of all, I sent our hearty thanks.
Thanks, Russell.
And I said, why? Any thoughts? And he says, hey, Jack. Hang on. I haven't actually seen it in about 30 years. I just thought it would be an interesting and quirky choice for you to discuss.
Mm.
I remember the rotoscoping being a bit weird, though disquieting.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think the first time I saw it on video, I was like, what's going on there?
So, coming back to your question about my experience.
Yeah, with Lord I thought you had two things before we got to that.
This is it. This is a convergence.
Nice, I like threads. It.
So the second person was my brother Graham. Now, why didn't you read that?
Jesus Christ.
It's not that long. We can talk about the Red Dwarf thing in a minute.
Can we talk about the science fiction bookshop?
We can do that as well, but read this first.
Graham says... Lord of the Rings was pretty big in our
house.
Do it
in a funny Graham voice.
Even though I never even got through the first book.
It does sound like
that. This is getting you back for all the comedy Scots accents you do.
Yeah.
Carry on.
The Radio 4 adaptation was on record as being my dad's favourite thing.
We did listen to that a lot.
Really?
And I seem to recall
it was fucking Restless Natives.
He won some bats on a mission to read aloud the entirety of The Hobbit to us, which he didn't complete. He didn't start. About a year ago, did he?
Piggy Hook
completed, yeah.
No, he was halfway to fucking Mount Doom when he fell foul.
Piggy Hook ran off
of the Serbian elves.
Carry on.
When Ralph Bakshi's adaptation aired on Channel 4, it was a must to record it.
It was.
The title was written on the tape label with extra care, a neatness that connoted...
Connoted.
This was to be a keeper. And we did watch it back quite a lot.
Yeah.
I remember the silhouettes over Red in the opening sequence. I remember Frodo saying to Gandalf, I wish it need not have happened in my time. I don't know why that line stuck with me. And I remember the jarring but thrilling mix of animation, rotoscoped animation and tinted film.
Mm. Okay.
In truth, the Dungeons & Dragons cartoon was probably more my métier. I'm surprised Jack's impression of Uni hasn't entered into Cream Gang canon.
Sorry, who's that?
It's Uni from Dungeons & Dragons.
You know the unicorn from Dungeons & Dragons.
Oh, right,
that's
okay.
A very good impression.
I never watched Dungeons & Dragons.
I checked that with an independent witness today and they said yes,
it's
a good impression.
It's quite good, yeah.
Was it a deaf person?
No.
Was it a deaf person?
It was a person?
Person
who'd never seen Dungeons &
Dragons.
Right, fair enough. Union Man Company.
That's it.
But I still remain very fond of Bakshi's folly. Perhaps because, like all my encounters with the classic Tolkien tale, he didn't make it to the end either.
Ah, nice payoff.
There we go.
You've been very kind to write to it, Mr. Kibblewhite.
So that's my experience predominantly with Tolkien as well.
Yeah. So you didn't watch Dungeons & Dragons?
No.
Really?
Oh. I wasn't even aware there was a Dungeons & Dragons cartoon.
What?
Well, you know.
I've got the box set.
What was the bad guy calling that?
Venger.
Davey.
Venger, that's right.
Davey Venger.
Venger is such a great name, isn't it?
What is?
Venger.
Venger.
Davey Venger.
Venger.
The Venger. It was fantastic.
The Venger boys. The Venger boys are coming and everybody...
The evil powers coming. He's got a flying horse.
Craig, if I was to say to you...
I've never watched Transformers either.
I was never really into the cartoon.
Now, do you know why you never watched that? It's because it's got someone using a vocoder in the opening titles.
Oh, Jesus.
You can't get that.
Suffering fuck.
Yeah.
You sure you don't want to talk about...
it's quite nasty.
Yeah, well, exactly. Can we,
I was just going to say this, that Ian Holm, Michael Horton, Craig, Robert Stevens, Craig, a young man by the name of William Nye, Craig, James Grout, Simon Cadell, John Lemessurier,
all our favourites,
Peter Vaughan.
Good.
That's
the cast of the radio one.
Yeah.
Who did? Is it John Lemessurier or Missouri?
I always say John Lemessurier.
Yeah, I can never
watch
it.
That's probably not right. It doesn't sound right when people say John Lemessurier.
No.
Because it doesn't sound posh enough.
No.
I also don't think it sounds right when people say Dune McEachern.
took me a long time to get to know how to say the name Hermione. I have to think about it every time.
Hermione. Mm.
Hermione.
My mum can't say European, which is all right now, isn't it? Really?
She said, is that why she voted to leave?
European. Anyway, back at the film.
So what is actually happening in the film?
So
I still have many Tolkien-based questions to ask you, but
we've got on to the donuts, which is nice.
They've managed to dodge the Black Riders with Strider's help. What's better about this than the Jackson one is that it spends longer at the inn, because all of that shit matters.
Mm-hmm.
How they meet Strider, it's their first encounter with the Black Riders, completely and all that sort of thing. In the films, they kind of skip past it quite quickly.
But you like the films, don't you?
Oh, I love the films, and I especially like the second one, The Two Towers.
That was the one I liked best.
Yeah,
which is
nominated for Best Picture
because there's lots of Bernard Hill in it.
Which is more faithful?
Gives a horse.
Which is more faithful?
What do you mean?
Well,
this and the Jacksons.
Yeah.
Oh no, neither of them are any more faithful than the other.
Right.
Both of them leave out things.
But they leave out a lot of the same things, don't they?
They do leave out the sort of the same things, and I think you're leading me down.
I think we might be leading down.
I think you're leading me down.
In Craig's direction.
Down to the Barrow Downs talk about Tom Bombadil.
Yeah.
How's about that?
Yo, Tom Bombadil, Tom Bombadillo.
Yeah.
Ring dong, derry dong.
I like that.
Ring a dong dillo.
Is that the song?
Yeah.
I like that name.
Tom Bombadil is a fucking amazing character.
So who is he?
Of course, you never know. So in the book, when they between them leaving the Shire into the wild, they leave the Shire and before they get to Bree, there's a section that has been left out of this and out of the Jackson films, which unfortunately actually matters. It really matters that it's left out. And I don't suppose it makes any difference if you don't know, but if you do know and you're watching the film, it kind of cheapens it a wee bit, the end of it a little bit. The point of the whole section is supposed to be that the minute they leave the Shire, they're into the wild and it's fucking dangerous out there. In a very short period, they nearly get eaten by a tree.
Nasty.
Old Man Willow, which is supposed to, I think, denote the dangers of the...
Is he really called Old Man Willow?
Yeah, yeah. No, it's just a willow tree. It snaps him.
Right.
That's Treebeard later on. But he gets called by a willow as well. But sorry, that's later on, Treebeard. But there is a thing with the willow tree there as well. The point is, it's supposed to denote that there are dangers in everywhere, in every part. There's no safe place. They go to a place called the Barrow Downs, which are, people who live in certain parts of Scotland as well as parts of England would recognise Barrow Downs.
Mm-hmm.
There's a sort of low green hills,
mm-hmm.
which are burial sites.
It's a market as well in Glasgow.
The fucking Barrow Downs. And while they're there, they stumble across tombs of dead warriors that have got holding swords and things. But they're infested with Barrow Whites, which are the ghosts of these people who were killed, you're told, eons ago in the fights with Angmar, which was an evil kingdom to the north, which is shoehorned into the Hobbit films. When they go north to the kingdom of Angmar, it's nothing to do with the Hobbit, everything to do with Lord of the Rings. One of the Nazgul is the king of Angmar. Anyway, point of this, all this happens, they get set about by the Whites, they're lying there, and they're about to, and you know, there's a nice sequence, a horrible sequence where they feel the ghost creeping up on them, they're going to throttle them, take their lives, and suddenly,
up jumps,
bouncing through the wall, throwing down the wall, comes this mad wee bastard with a big fucking red beard and yellow boots, literally leaping around the place, going, hey doll, merry doll, ring a dong dillo, who by telling things to happen, they happen and they all fuck off. So they take them. He takes them back to his house, in the house of Tom Bombadil, is the crucial chapter. And what's important about it is, he hands him the ring, he sits and talks to Frodo.
And what kind of cat is he?
Well, we don't know. He just sits there and he clearly looks at
hello.
Hello. I'm Tom Bombadil.
I'm Farline of Phantom.
Or has he got more of a Cockney accent?
Come on.
What do you say? I doubt that, them ghastly bastards. I doubt what they've got there. Don't go down there again. J-
just I'm a right. Nice.
Or does he have a throat?
I'm still bothered with him!
Have you heard that?
Oh, it's a bit, sounds a bit like the janitor and police are, oh, I'm Tom Bombadil. Anyway,
to your point, yes.
The point is,
yeah.
At one stage, Frodo says, he says to Frodo, can I see the ring? He gives him the ring.
Can I see your ring?
Yeah. And
That's quite late into the programme before we got into that.
35 minutes in before you got a ring joking.
Who's this guy that's turned up?
Oh, it's an elf called Glor. Well, I think that's Legolas, actually, that's turned up for the stuff. And the point is, Frodo realises quite quickly that he's handed the ring over of his free will,
mm-hmm.
when that's something you struggle to do.
Yeah.
And he puts the ring on Tom Bombadil and it doesn't make him disappear.
What the fuck's going on?
Is his fingers too big?
No, I just said he put the ring on, you fuckwit.
Is it because his finger's too big?
So
I think it's because his finger's too big.
So the point is, it has no power over him. Now the reason it matters is it demonstrates that there are things in this world that are older and more powerful than what they're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the totality.
And is Tom one of them?
Of the story, and Tom is one of them. And he asks Gandalf later on, Frodo asks Gandalf, why don't we just leave the ring with Tom Bombadil? And Gandalf says, well, that's no use. He'll just forget about it, lose it, or throw it away or something.
His finger's too big.
The thing that's good about it is it demonstrates that the story is not the entire world.
Mm.
And that there are other things and there are other options and other things that can happen and other things that will attack them that aren't necessarily just to do with...
And is that your take on
just
that?
Just to do with that. Yeah, I think so.
That's quite an interesting...
But also,
I'm genuinely... Uh-huh. Doffing my cap to you.
Can I say this more? Because there's also this place into the
conclusion
as well.
Oh yeah.
I'll fight for you, Jack. To get this explanation.
Yeah. The thing that's problematic about missing it all out. Now, to be fair, you can see why they would miss it out.
Yeah.
So why would they miss it out?
With yellow boots.
Especially after Robin Cook died, it was difficult to cast them and still go, wasn't he, having it?
It's the Lord of the Rings team from Glasgow.
They're from the Shire. They're dealing with Sauron's eye. Anyway, yeah, when they're in the Barrow Downs, Pippin, I think, takes a knife that's there, because they all take weapons and things. It doesn't mean anything, that's what he carries.
Mm-hmm.
Right at the very end, if you can cast your mind back to sort of having watched Fellowship of the Rings.
Sitting down.
When Eowyn is fighting the Witch King right at the very end, you know, no man can kill me, and you know, he's the big fucking mad Nazgul and all that. And Pippin shoves a sword in the back of his knee. Now, in the film, he sticks it in the back of his knee and he goes, "Aya!" And then, "I am a BCG." And then she sticks the sword through his face. Right, da da da. But that doesn't make any sense. Because why would his sword make any difference? And it plays up her saying, you know, no man can kill me. And she says, well, I'm no man, right? Well, fair dues. In the book, it matters because he's lifted this particular knife. And this knife was designed to fight the Witch King of Angmar.
Oh, yeah, that was lucky.
And is bound around by spells. But is it luck? That's
or
the
predestination.
Point. Yes.
Right.
So it matters that it's at the end. Him sticking the knife into the back of his knee breaks the spell that allows her to kill him. Taking that out of the picture actually diminishes
that
bit of it.
So that was very, very impressive, sir.
And so why is he not in it? Is it just because he looks stupid? Seriously, is that why they cut Tom Bombadil out of the film?
I think so.
Because it is a moment of jeopardy.
Well, Fog on the Barrow Downs and all that is really
ticklish. Fog on the Barrow Downs, I mean.
It's actually a brilliantly written chapter, and it's really tense and it's quite scary. And, you know, the great thing when I was reading the books for the first time, which I did really late, is that there's another two fucking books. You know they're not going to die, but you know, the jeopardy's there, Jack.
I like a bit of jeopardy.
They might not all make it.
They fought for it. They might not all make it. When did you first see this?
I saw this with my mate Andy Munro.
Good guy.
We all know who that is. But he is a good guy. Yeah,
he's a good guy.
In about sort of 83, 84 or something, we got it out on the old video.
Okay.
one of those thorny MI boxes with lots and lots of writing on the back that the Wicker Man had.
Was it the oversized big?
No,
big
it wasn't. No, it was. It was the one
that cover.
It would have had that cover.
Yeah, okay.
And the back of it had like a lot of text.
Uh-huh.
And we watched it, and I had no idea what was going on, but seemed to enjoy it. Andy was very into the Lord of the Rings stuff. He'd even managed to get his poor parents to let him send off to the back of the News of the World magazine or something to get a book club that gave you leather-bound copies of The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings, which was very nice. But then he had to buy, like, fucking 50 books a month for it.
Yeah. Do you remember those things? Remember the video club?
Oh, yeah. And classical music club.
That video thing where you signed up and they gave you, like, three videos. You could choose three videos, but you had to sign up free. But then you would pay on where they'd send you one a month or something. But they were like 20 quid. It was a real fucking rip-off. Well, suppose it would work if you could remember to cancel it.
Aye, when video libraries first started off, some of them would do this thing when you bought one of the videos for like 80 quid or something, and then you got to rent other ones.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, Chris, with
I think Video One used to do that.
So your interest in Tolkien and Lord of the Rings, so did that then extend out into other similar fantasy-type things?
No. I've no interest in other types of fantasy. I'm a real fucking snob.
So you never got into Dungeons and Dragons or...
No.
Didn't play any role-playing games?
Nope.
All that kind of stuff?
I like Tolkien. That's it.
Well, I played Dungeons and Dragons for the first time last year, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and you get really fed up with it really quickly.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things that the kid loves, and you're sort of, you know.
And yeah, it takes fucking 10 hours.
That's it, yeah.
Did they kill you?
So and you realise you made a really stupid decision. Sort of, you know, 2 hours ago, and if you'd just gone back then. But one thing good about it was, though, is we played with our friends Andrew and his son Alex, and Alex just went for batshit crazy decisions, like to start fights for no reason, which was great fun.
Sounds like a plan I'd follow.
Absolutely, yeah.
Cunt.
Well, we did a lot of role playing when I was at school, and my friend, why did you say that? Well, I'm sitting there with my nice tank top on.
Who did big boy play? Hey, my cousin.
That was after the days of Big Boy. Thank you very much. But my friend David...
I'm going to have the other donut, by the way.
Go for it.
I don't like banana bread.
That's fine. My friend David was so keen on role-playing. There was a regular role-playing magazine. I'm trying to remember what it was called. It wasn't White Dwarf. There was another one. And when he was about 13, he put an advert in the back of that magazine.
All right.
Basically.
For pals?
No, not for pals.
For sex.
There was a sub-genre of role-playing called play-by-mail.
Dear Jimmy, could you fix it for me?
Called play-by-mail?
Play-by-mail.
I think I did sign up to a website like that.
Not quite that, okay. So play-by-mail
is... It wasn't endorsed by any celebrities at the time, was it?
No, not at all. So
wow.
Play-by-mail. So play-by-mail is
a
turn-based
man.
System where through the post you receive the
moves.
Description of the scenario from your games master, and then you write back to them to explain what you're going to do.
Fuck me, that is a long game.
So anyway, so David, when he was about 14, he decided that he and his pal, whose nickname was Mule for some reason, were going to start this.
Before you tell the rest of the story, can I just ask you, see that thing about not sneering at something on TV Green, people's enthusiasms? Does this count? Or do I get a buy on this?
I think you get a buy.
Because
on it,
I either laugh at it or I punch his fucking face in about 2 minutes.
I think
minutes.
You get a buy because this is clearly mental.
What happened with Davy and Mule?
So basically, they put this
up. How did that relationship work out? Sorry. Tell us about
it. Did it arrive by Hawk on Vellum? He hath taken over the lower tower.
So they
Mum, the Panthers arrived with my next bet.
So they put this advert in the magazine, and they started getting inquiries. And actually, what also happened was the magazine editor started calling David's house for payment for the advert. Because back in the day, they just used to publish ads for payment. Ultimately, the whole thing fell down. Because David had assumed that we, his friends, would basically do all the work for him. And so when he turned up and said that he'd done all this stuff, we were to draw the pictures and write it out. We kind of told him to fuck off. And we suggested that they called their company Me and Mule Productions. So in the end, he just used to hide in his bedroom whenever the phone call came.
Crystal does that when the guy comes round for the Windies.
Well, I'm sure. Now, I'd like to point out, just back to the film for a moment.
Huh?
We've now, Gandalf has fallen foul of Saruman.
Already?
Yeah, yeah. Because...
But it's there.
Because true to the... Yeah, because true to the books... it's the same in the film.
Doesn't he get killed by the Bobak?
No, it's not. It's still later.
All right.
Because you remember, he's at Gandalf is at Rivendell. He's there when Frodo wakes up, but has to explain to him what happens to him. And then when he explains to him, there's all the big scene with him escaping from the top of Isengard. But the film, the Jackson film, slots in earlier on the fight with Christopher Lee and Ian McKellen and all that, which is great, but it's nothing to do with the book. In the book, it basically just says they have a bit of an argument.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, heated
argument.
Which we
saw earlier, didn't
we? Yeah, but that's what happens. There's no fight.
There seems a lot more singing in this version.
There is a lot more singing in this version, but there's a lot even more singing in the books. As I say, but it doesn't matter, because it's written out, it's separated out as... It's poetry, so you just read past it.
Yeah, I bet so, you read it.
Craig, were you in...
You go back and read it.
Craig, were you into Fist when you were young?
Was... How dare you?
Do you want another cushion?
Which he's, was the...
he said, biting into a donut.
which was the telephone role-playing system?
No.
So you dialed a particular... You dialed a particular number, and it was... you know, when we were...
How did that work out for people?
To DTMF phones. So uh-huh. You know, it was the sort of thing which is you find yourself at a pass. Press one to go north and two to go south.
No, of course, I've done that.
That was
a
standard at
the time. My parents would have gone fucking batshit crazy.
Well, that's because they were premium rate numbers. You see.
Yeah, I'll bet. I did have a few of those Ian Livingstone books.
Oh, yeah, Fighting Fantasy.
Yeah, they were good fun.
Yeah.
They were right.
Yeah, I had a few of them, yeah. Although the ones I liked more were... My favourite one was one that was about Dracula. It was like being Dracula's castle. That was great.
Yeah.
But I mean, basically, it was a sort of. For me, it was basically, you know, at that age, sort of early teens, it was probably still watching Doctor Who, obsessed with Star Wars.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I loved my Osborne supernatural guides.
Yeah, yeah. And you were on your first.
And I wanked a lot. Uh-huh.
And actually, Red said you were on your first 10 years poet laureate as well.
I was, yeah, absolutely.
So you had a lot on your plate.
I had a lot on my plate, yeah. I had to crack one off for the whole family.
Not
fun out for die.
Who did you fancy when you were about 13? I don't mean people, I mean like famous people. I'm not saying dogs either. I mean, who would the teenage you have had a wee sort of thought to think about? No, I won't, tell me.
No, that was it. That's really good.
No, but I mean, there must be someone on like telly or something like that. I'm quite happy to go through a very fucking long list.
I don't know if I'd put famous people particularly. I had my wank tape.
What was that?
Well, you know, when you have a video on standby for anybody that crops up, you can tape. In my case, any advert with any bloke was top off.
No.
Yeah, I quite liked the bit when the brothel somebody's... gets raided in The Best Little Whorehouse in Town.
No, we've had this discussion about one or two video.
Or just the whole of Masters of the Universe.
Janet Ellis, I was very fond of.
Janet Ellis is a sexy one of these seven letters.
Don't know.
Outline.
What was that?
That was the Ronson Mission. Do you remember this programme? John Ronson had a series on Death 2 called The Ronson Mission.
That's right.
And one of the episodes is that he goes and meets superfans.
Uh-huh.
And there's a guy called Nick... I think I keep thinking he's called Nicholas Hammond, but that's also the guy who played Spider-Man. But maybe he was Nicholas Hammond, who ran.
I think it was Nicholas
ran
Hammond.
The Janet Ellis.
To be honest with you, he was at a bit of a loose end after Spider-Man.
Who ran the Janet Ellis fan club, and that's Janet Ellis crossword. And so he said, John Ronson was looking at it. He said, "Well, give me a clue," and it was Janet Ellis.
Wow.
Is a sexy one of these seven letters.
You see that voice you do for anyone like that?
Didn't it?
Did they all talk like that?
Yeah, everyone did. Well, everyone used, and also a lot of the nerds used to talk in a particular way, and then John Major became Prime Minister.
And then there's the validation.
Yeah.
It
went away.
So
other impression.
You've not said it who you
I'm
fancied
not getting
that
into
is.
That.
Why not?
Because so, I don't want to.
Is this like the Patrick Troughton thing?
No, it's... What's that about Patrick Troughton?
I bet you didn't want to talk about how he died.
I talk about Patrick Troughton. Anyway, I wanted to tell you...
Well, it's one or the other. We're either going to talk about who you fancied off the telly when you were 13 or how Patrick Troughton died. Trust me, we're watching The Lord of the Rings. We've got as much time.
What I will do, if you, I give my Cliff Richard impression, but that's...
Was it Cliff Richard that you fancied when you were 13?
But he's also in the same episode of The Ronson Mission because John follows... the Cliff Richard fan club to Cliff Richard singing live, and they got to him, and they say, Cliff, will you say hello to the Wickham branch of... Will you say hello to the Wickham branch of your fan club on stage? And he says, no, but I'll say hello to them now. Hi, fans. And that's it.
That's nice of him.
But he won't say hello to them live on stage.
Who else? Who else?
Anyway, back to fantasy.
Had a bit of a thing for Catherine Quinlan in the Twilight Zone movie.
Who?
What about fantasy films, though? Because there was that run in the 80s of...
there was a lot, wasn't there?
Of Hawk the Slayer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good picture. Well, great. It's fucking terrible. I love it.
But it's great fun.
Beastmaster.
Yeah.
Who was the...
Mark Singer.
That's back titular? To what you were talking about a minute ago.
He was the titular Beastmaster.
He loved Mark Singer in the Beachmaster. I think that was an exercise machine.
The Beachmaster 2000.
He was also in V, wasn't he?
He was. Anyway, Beastmaster.
Oh, I liked Diana from V, that was right.
Oh, yeah.
1984, yeah. Summer of that year would have been... Whoa.
She wouldn't have been gagging.
Whoa. That's true. But I was also 13, so she wouldn't
have been... She was quite happy putting birds in her mouth as well. Not such a keen uncomfortable.
Yeah, there was also Lady Hawk. Legends.
Oh, Lady Hawk is an amazing film.
The best of them all is Krull.
But you know what? Here's an interesting thing. If you think of that whole fantasy, and they must have all thought when they were making these films that they were of a sort of a piece.
Yeah.
But Lady Hawk isn't really. It's more like a sort of medieval fairy tale.
Yeah, it's quite a sweet film, actually.
It's Lady Hawk.
It's Rutger Hauer and Michelle Pfeiffer Menowitz.
Yeah.
Matthew Broderick's
in it, isn't it?
Michelle Pfeiffer Menowitz.
He plays the sort of squire type, Matthew Broderick.
No, Matthew Broderick's a novice monk.
That's it.
And Leo McKern is the older monk.
Oh God!
He's only the younger Imperator. In the short-lived one of the great the only great thing about the short-lived series Muppets Tonight is that they used to do whenever they had a celebrity on that week, they used to look back to a program that they'd been on in the '70s, and it was like whoever they were, and it was like Michelle Pfeiffer. It was the dating game, but it was the Muppet dating game.
Uh-huh.
And because they were all before they were famous, they all had Jewish names. Oh, so Michelle was Michelle Pfeiffer Menowitz. And Rutger Hauer, who was the knight. Michelle Pfeiffer Menowitz was a sort of the young beauty, you know,
who turns into a different creature all the time.
The bishop, John Wood, I think it was the bishop of Avignon, wants to get up Michelle Pfeiffer Menowitz.
So John Wood.
John Wood, but she wouldn't. And so he curses them so that she is a hawk by day and Rutger Hauer is a panther by night. Mm. And they never meet except for a moment when it's dusk and dawn. And
that's quite an over elaborate curse, isn't it?
You're a medieval bishop. That's what you're
Do you remember how the bishop in any way describes the differences between men and women in the medieval world? Does the bishop do that in any way? That you could let us know how he says it. This is the best setup. And you know, folks, none of this is rehearsed.
No, I can't think.
You can't think that the bishop might say, well, the women do this and the men do that. She's a hawk.
You think Bishop John of the world. When he put on his curse, he said, "Where the hawks did you this, and the panthers did you that. And that's the difference between the panthers and the hawks. Did you do? That's £5 million, please."
There you go. We got there
eventually. Thanks very much. And then
my elbow's sore from actually elbowing that one in there, you know.
Anyway, the point is the two monks have to set aside. They have to go, and you have to kill the bishop in the cathedral, and the curse is broken. Fantastic film, cursed ironically at the outset when it was first released with a really jarring electronica soundtrack.
The Tangerine Dream music.
It's like a Tangerine Dream. It's really bad. Well, it's not actually bad. It just doesn't fit.
Yeah.
And then I don't know why, but so I don't, maybe years later, and I really mean years later, I mean like in the late 90s, mid to late 90s.
Donner film, I think.
Somebody must have revised it, or the studio maybe were having trouble selling it to fucking Movies for Men or something. And they put, there's now an orchestral score on it.
Aye.
It's a fantastic film. But as you say, the greatest of them all is Krull.
But I've thought of another one. Krull is great, and I love Krull. I saw it at the cinema. It probably wins because it's got Tucker Jenkins in it and Bernard Breslau.
And Bernard Breslau as a Cyclops.
Yeah.
But that is Range.
A film that I saw a couple of years ago for the first time.
That's Range.
A film that I saw about 3 years ago for the first time. Dragon Slayer.
Oh.
That is a great movie. You ever seen that?
No.
Whose idea was it you watched that?
I think I may have borrowed it from this very house. Mr. Diamond.
Dragon Slayer, which I've been pushing on to Cream Gang Films for about 10 years now.
And could you please tell us the name of the dragon in it?
Vermithrax Pejorative.
Which was mentioned a few years ago in...
What was it mentioned?
Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones, that's right. Referred to
old... Yeah. There's a bit when someone goes through the names of the old dragons and they put that one in, which I thought was a very nice touch.
Wow. Oh, it's an immense film. And it's probably the last major go motion film.
Yeah.
It's not stop motion.
It looks beautiful.
It's fantastic. And every design of dragon... is taken from
absolutely
the way, because the way they move like lizards
and
all that sort of thing is just,
it was written and directed
phenomenal.
By was it Matthew Robbins?
Yes,
because didn't
that,
he
is
also
Kate Robbins?
He is
Kate,
he's one of the family,
he's one of the Robbins, the yeah
he went on to be in Diddy Movies.
He was the one that just used to do the harmonising in the back of the Robbins.
He was kind of dead. He was kind of associated with Spielberg and all those guys.
Yeah, he was ILM, I think.
Batteries Not Included might be one of his as well.
But, I mean, it's a Disney film. It's an extraordinary film for being... because it is a Disney film. And the extraordinary thing about it is it's a completely irreligious film.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's about magic in this pre-Christian feudal world dying out because of the coming of Christianity.
Yeah.
And it's not presented as a good thing.
No, absolutely, yeah.
And Ian McDiarmid, of course, is the missionary.
Do it.
Who turns up.
The third
fourth
fifth. I think you'll find this monastery is quite operational.
Right, I want to ask.
Oh, he was in the middle of talking about that.
It's alright, it's okay.
I like Dragon Slayer, Chris. I was enjoying talking to you about
that's
it.
Fine, but
and I think the listeners were too. But no, Jack must
speak. No, Jack wants to tell us something.
No, I want to ask you a question.
Go on then.
So, in the computer game, is that Spectrum game The Hobbit?
No, I don't.
No, wait. If you typed in op do, right?
What?
Op do.
Op do.
OP space DO, it would come up with the lines, hang on.
Uh-huh.
The water evaporates, the black water evaporates, the fast river evaporates, the crack is dead. What's that mean? As a talking lag.
Sounds like drug talk to me.
Okay, let me get through it again, right? So, this was, you know, like in computer games, you'd sometimes find that if
you type
in something weird.
Easter egg or something, whatever.
So, type in opdo, it says the water evaporates, the black water evaporates, the fast river evaporates, the crack is dead.
Don't know, fuck knows.
Fucking hell.
What are you talking about?
Do you know what? That's been something that's been bugging me for about 30 years, and I thought.
Is that true?
Yeah, that's true.
The crack is dead.
He's not looked it up anywhere or asked anyone else, he just thought you'd wait until. By chance, you befriended two separate men, then came into a house in the east end of Glasgow, doing a set of commentaries, and then 2 years into that, you'd ask us.
Wait until they're talking about Dragon Slayer, and then.
Then I'll just cut across them.
Opdo.
Yeah. What the hell is that mean?
The rotoscoped
Tolkien-esque.
The rotoscoped Legolas is very camp.
Mm.
Do you know who plays him?
Who?
Anthony
Daniels. Duncan Novell.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Duncan Novell would have been good.
That would have been great. Going up to the Balrog, going, Chase me.
Wow, Andrew Daniels in
this. Yeah.
So what do we know about the production of this then?
Well, Saul Zaentz of Blue Note Records fame.
Mm-hmm.
Who's a good guy?
Yeah.
Not
he's
the
not
good
the
guy.
Guy.
Not
the good guy.
He's a good guy.
Good guy. He's accountable.
Yeah.
Who got into film production in the 70s. And made a lot of... quite heavy films, though, didn't he, Saul Zaentz?
Yeah, I think he also... I
Play in the Fields of the Lord. And
I think he also made The English Patient, didn't he? I remember him winning an Oscar.
But,
big,
I mean,
white
this,
beard.
Yeah, big white beard, very Jewish.
I don't think anybody can make The English Patient.
You don't think any what?
So that was like a Brexit patient. Joke.
No, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're going to find, they're going to ruin the fucking day.
The English patient tested my fucking patience today.
Oh, it's a dreadful film. It looks lovely.
It does.
Anyway. But it looks, I mean, it looks that, lovely for the first hour, because after that, you're just looking at the ceiling.
It's that shot, is that shot as well when Kirsten Scott gets out of the bath.
Mm.
So how does that
and as Patrick Stewart says in Extras, I see everything. It's just, it's a really, really oddly sort of...
rude?
Yeah, it's a really quite spectacularly graphic shot of her. She gets out of a bath. You go, all right, okay. Dirty bastards.
Aye, so he made things like... you know, make things like, did he not make the Milagro Beanfield War?
Something like that, yeah.
Which is a great film.
That is a good film, actually, yeah.
Not a film I've not seen for a long
time. Yeah, but I remember seeing it. I think I saw it on the telly. I thought it was really fantastic. Really lovely
film. Title.
But anyway, they're all... what title?
I said a catchy title.
There are very few Robert Redford films that I don't like, actually. Oh. Directing, it was me. Unlike fucking Warren Beatty, who
he's quite hateful.
Who genuinely...
Let's come back to Warren Beatty. Yeah, let's not forget that.
No.
Anyway, Saul Zance, whose great catchphrase was always... the way to make a small fortune in pictures is to start with a big fortune. got the rights for Lord of the Rings. Tolkien had refused to sell them to Disney, I think I'm right in saying. Then there was this really fucked up period when the Beatles wanted to make it.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, and the Beatles and were going to play. Yeah. They were going to play all the Hobbits.
Oh, God, put the ring on now, Paul.
There's the Balrog. Just going, just you dealing with it. I'm going to go.
They'd have got like Spike Milligan to play.
I'm going to go and beat up my man.
They'd have got Spike Milligan to play Gandalf or something.
Say goodbye to the Shire and your children.
Bilbo Baggins trundled into the station.
Yes, George, stop.
Hey, so, hey, it's a big ring. Macha!
How does the first song sound?
What?
Give us the first tunes.
That's how you play the guitar to it. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-dum.
That's good.
Oh, dear. Wife beating from me to you.
Yeah.
Anyway, Saul Zance came into possession of the rights, which he kept all the way through. He still has the rights to a huge amount of it, all the merchandise, a lot of the merchandising rights.
Is he credited on the Jackson films? Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Anyway, Ralph Bakshi comes tumbling along, having made.
Did you Fritz the Cat?
Fritz the Cat. Yeah. And had he made Dragons by this point? I can't remember if he'd made
but
it before. Fritz
the Cat would have put him at the sort of cutting edge.
Absolutely.
The counterculture.
Yes, yeah.
So, anyway, they start work on this, and it's, you know, the usual thing was all the money in the world, we're going to make a big film, going to make a fortune.
Mm-hmm.
And then it started to go a bit wrong. The thing that most people, I think, will remember about watching this the first time around, apart from the rotoscope and all that sort of thing, what you really remember is, what the fuck is the rest of it?
Yeah.
Because, of course, it only gets as far as Helm's Deep. We'll get to what happens when that happens, but I first saw this not for
which caused a huge fight between Ralph Bakshi and him, didn't
yes.
it?
Yes. Because they pulled the money, and...
Also, Bakshi said, in that case, we need to call it part one.
Uh-huh.
And in those days, that wasn't the done thing.
Yeah,
they said, no, people won't pay to see that. And then there was a huge backlash when folk went to see it, because it was a big success.
Mm. Yeah.
And then, as you say...
Where the fuck is the rest of it?
So when they set out, was the intention to shoot it as a trilogy then? When they
No.
Two films.
And actually, Peter Jackson's films weren't meant to be a trilogy.
That's right, there's supposed to be two.
They were supposed to be two films.
Mm-hmm.
But they get picked up, they get dropped, and when New Line picked it up, they said, we'll make it three films.
Mm.
And they made all the monies.
Well, they did, because, I mean, I've seen footage of... That's why he lost all that weight, Peter Jackson.
Mm.
Well, actually, he lost that after, so it's not true, but you see him literally having three different setups and running between them.
Yes. It's an incredible business.
Yeah, it's a huge...
And it took, fucking 5 years or 3 years. Yeah. Or
it's very impressive.
Yeah.
I just wish Peter Jackson was still making films like Brain Dead and...
Well, I mean, you could do both, but I'd quite like it if he went back to doing those as well.
So, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, and not just do, you know, this A-list epic kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Because The Hobbit, Oh, I was so excited about The Hobbit, because you want more of it. Oh, there's this really bad Balrog. At least it's got wings, though. Oh, Tolkien fans.
Oh, dear, it looks a wee bit like...
No, but I want you to pay... I ask you to pay attention.
This is the end of the Fellowship of the Ring, isn't it?
No, no. Fellowship of the Ring, you still get to Lorien. And,
All right,
and then you have the fight with where Boromir gets killed.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
But this is the big set piece in it. Now, look at the Balrog.
Yeah.
Look at the Balrog.
Yes.
Look at the Balrog.
Yeah.
Do you see the Balrog?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, that's that dude.
Just keep that in mind.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. We'll come back to that later.
Okay.
Okay.
Because it doesn't look like a demon from the underworld. It just looks like a guy with a fucking...
It looks like
one
of the things from where the world
are we going to discuss its wings?
We'll do that, okay. Yeah. So, the Hobbit's all good to an extent.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember going to see the first one, when it was the first one.
Yeah.
And I was really excited about it. We saw all of them one way or the other. And it was like, I really wanted to like the first one. But you have to admit to yourself eventually that it's a little material stretched far too thin, and the tone's not great. And there's bits of it nice. People don't like the song and all that at the start, and the dishes and all that. But that's all very faithful to the book, and I like the feel of it and the Hobbit hole.
We didn't see it in 50 frames per second, which caused much upset.
Yeah, it's meant to be really bad, isn't it?
But all of that looks great anyway, but it's not a good film. The second one's better, and the third one's just a fucking rammy with shit they've made up in it.
I think I probably liked the third one most.
You see, the second one I like best because it's got all the stuff in the mountain with Smaug.
Yeah.
You know,
that's the best one.
Which all the stuff where they're fighting the dragon.
Two is the Smaug
fucking
one.
Fucking immense. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
The Desolation of Smaug.
Bendy Toy Camber Sands.
Yeah, that's the Brian Cucumber sitting there. So all that's Bendy Toy Camber Sands.
That was a Kent Arthur Strong joke from the other night.
So but the problem is, of course, that they're made by a bunch of fucking scabs.
Yes. Yeah.
Tell the tale.
Wow.
Basically, as he was making the film up, he doesn't like unions, or Sir Peter Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
And the actors' union in New Zealand was trying to get a blanket deal for all the actors beyond the big stars and whatnot. And he threw a strop and said either he got them to ban the unions from making a non-unionised film, or he would take it to America to make. And the New Zealand government...
And the government cared.
...helped him to...
But actually, I think it's worse than that. Because I think it wasn't just on that production. I think they demanded that they withdraw rights...
For most films.
For the film crafts.
Yeah.
Entirely.
So I'm not sure if it was film unions.
Peter Jackson... Warner Brothers, certainly. Peter Jackson didn't say anything about it. I'm sure he colluded in it. The most disappointing thing is that the stars, the so-called fucking Labour-supporting Martin Freeman... And Serena McKellen and all that clearly said fuck all.
Yeah, absolutely.
About it.
Yeah.
An absolute grim. Fucking disgrace.
So hang on,
which
when
makes
they were
them a bunch of fucking scabs.
So would it,
and there's
it,
nothing, my friend.
The third film?
Nothing's lower than a scab.
No, but hang on, was that for the third film?
No, that was for
the
Hobbit
it was
film.
The entire production.
Okay. Yeah, so it's not like
them all
the actors were contracted up and they were going to struggle to get out of
it. No, because as Equity pointed out, there is no way that the actors would have known. There's no way that the main actors would have... would not have known that
this was going on.
Because their contracts are negotiated through Equity one way or the other. They're signed off and all that sort of thing. So they would have known.
Uh-huh.
And they said nothing about it. It got very little coverage here. The Guardian ran a story on it. New Zealand, whatever the paper is that dealt with it, New Zealand did. And it's scandalous. So I won't
watch it. Well, you and I just came across it one day and started talking about it.
And I remember the last year, topicality, fact fans, the last general election... Martin Freeman did that party political broadcast, remember, where he'd said, he was standing there and they said, it's the vote Labour, it's about fairness, it's about the kind of society you want to live in, and it was about workers' rights and zero hours contracts. Mm. And I tweeted him the link and said, apart from the people that work under you, you cunt.
And did he say anything?
Did he fuck?
I'll bet, yeah.
But I just kept on tweeting it every time I saw him in the telly.
It's quite right, too.
So what's Jackson's position in this, then? What's his justification?
He was central to it.
Yeah, I've never read anything about it since.
Because he was saying that he would take the production away.
Okay. For what reason, though? What was his...
Because he didn't...
Yes, I heard that, but for what reason? What's his justification for that?
To save money.
Because he didn't want to have to deal with the union.
Collective bargaining, they get pay rates and working hours, he wants to... It's like the James Cameron hating... making aliens in Britain because they actually had unionised labour, so therefore they got breaks.
They got
and things.
Breaks and lunch and things.
And
like
he
that.
Hated that.
And you know, when somebody fell off and caught fire, they didn't stop. They stopped production. Anyway, so that's our.
Do you think that's all right? Clearly, don't you?
No, I'm interested in how he defends it.
Well, the thing is, I'm not sure that he has really said very much about it at all.
We'll look it up and get back to
that. But they neither have any of them, and that's what I find very disappointing about it, because I would have thought if it was brought to the attention of somebody like Ian McKellen, he'd fucking have something to say about it. Apparently not. Anyway, means I won't, what it does mean is, I won't watch those fucking films ever again.
I bet you Sam Neill wouldn't do that.
He's almost the good guy.
Why is he such a good guy, Sam Neill?
He's just a nice bloke. He makes great films. He makes wine. He lives in New Zealand. He's a very modest, nice man. We like him.
And I think if you see the sort of films that he's involved in now,
yeah,
Search for the Wilder People, for example, which is a fucking awesome film.
Yeah.
And the director,
a good film.
The director, and the director of which has been justly deserved by now directing Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah, and he made What We Do in the Shadows, which is a terrific film as well.
I haven't seen that.
Oh, you'd like that.
I haven't seen that.
Anyway.
Or you'd like it.
Chris, Birmingham.
Birmingham.
Exotic location. Give me spice.
Birmingham, which should have below it in its title, Birmingham. Surprisingly nice, actually.
Yeah, it's nice.
Now.
So you made a reference to Birmingham earlier on. And you said you were going to come back to it. I think it was in...
J.R.R. Tolkien.
Yeah. Oh, there we go.
Like his contemporary... Well, not contemporary. Well, almost contemporary. I'm getting confused. He's from the burbs of Birmingham. He went to King Edward School, I think it's called, which is a sort of... It was on the outskirts of Birmingham. It was a sort of semi-rural, but they were on the outskirts of Birmingham. Right. It was all industrial. It was all there. Uh-huh. In the same way that Enoch Powell did.
Yeah.
And in quite the same way, ended up with that sort of slightly semi-mystical view of England.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where you had this... You could have all the advantages of an industrial society, mm-hmm. the comforts, but actually live in a quite reasonably rural, mm-hmm. comfortable place. Mm-hmm. Hence... Encroaching in industry is one of the great themes and background themes of Lord of the Rings.
Ah, okay.
And trying to preserve that sort of comfortable, rural, slightly squirearchical middle class existence against on the onset of industry. Oh. That's a definite theme of Lord of the Rings.
Wow. And the Jews.
You're clearly the
elves. Not too keen on them either.
I'd like to point out, by the way, that the elves are a bunch of fucking idiots. Unlike in the Jackson films, where they fucking turn up at Helm's Deep and fight and all that, in the book, the elves do fucking nothing. They do nothing.
Because that's because they live for a very long time and they sort of float above it all.
Well, they just see that it's not their problem
anymore.
Are you
going to have a pork pie this late on?
I like it.
After I've done it, are you going to go back to Savory now? You can't go back to Savory now.
I wouldn't want to clean his cage out.
I can't go back to Savory.
No.
You're going to have a fucking jobby like a Neapolitan ice cream.
Yeah.
Segmented.
Don't like that at all.
The elves in the Lord of the Rings do very little.
And is that because they're kind of semi...
No, they're just done. I think it's the point is meant to be that they've done their bit. This is the third age and they fought all the battles in the first and the second age. And now it's all up to men.
Are they too old for that shit?
They are literally too old for that shit. But they're seen as a place of refuge and they'll give advice. Mm-hmm. The problem is, you're supposed to fucking defer to them. If they really wind me up in Lord of the Rings, you're supposed to defer to them and treat them as if they're something special. They do fucking nothing.
Are they like party grandees? Are they basically how Gordon Brown sees himself?
No, they're not fucking hateful cunts.
I just wonder if he's, you know...
Fucking poltroons.
This is a particularly angry commentary.
Shitting on the shitting on the hill. Above the great firth of forth, dispensing wisdom.
Look what your God has done for me. No, they're not that bad, fuck's sake.
Oh, okay.
No, they're just a bit fucking hopeless, you know.
So you're...
Have I just defamed elves?
I notice you're more worried about that than defaming Gordon Brown.
I don't care.
You're quite fine. You just stand on one side of him all the time.
Exactly.
Keep walking around.
Exactly.
Every time he turns, you just turn him.
Exactly. It's all good.
Oh, I can hear a voice, but I can't use it. Oh.
So the theory about the influence of Birmingham on Tolkien,
yes,
right? Is that something that you have come to, or is this...
No, that's a well-trained...
Right, okay.
In Tolkien era.
Right, yeah. So this is what I wanted to get into.
Tolkienania.
Which is, what is the subculture around Tolkien then? What is it like... Vibrant now,
and
like,
all that I knew was the hole in my shoe, which was letting in water, letting in water, letting in water.
Why are we singing that?
Because it's kind of hippie-ish, isn't it? That's your subculture around.
But you see, that's an interesting thing, which is, why did hippies take up Tolkien?
Yeah.
Because it has nothing to do with hippie.
No, it doesn't at all.
It's
quite conservative.
It's entirely conservative. Yeah. That's the point. And it's about violence. Mm. It's about betrayal, murder,
restoring older orders.
Yeah,
traditional values.
It's about, you know,
Birmingham.
It's about inherent.
It's about the selection,
sort of
really.
Evil and original sin. Yeah, it's basically, you know. So it's get fucking. But all they could see, of course, is fucking hobbits living in the woods and all that. They live in nice houses with fires
and
work all day.
None of your communal living with scabby armpits for them.
It's probably more to do with elves who just walk about in the woods and just enjoy life and see the stars, and that is true because they're a bunch of fucking wanks.
Mm.
So in Tolkien fandom, what's the biggest bone of contention then?
It depends. It depends how cuntish you are. If you're like me,
we've come to you,
and I'm very cuntish. Then, before the films came out, I can tell you
from his body language that he's not proud of this.
Yeah. No, I used to be on this message board
called.
I'm not telling you what it's called because I don't want people searching for it.
It's called.
Fucking say
it. It's called. I think you'll find.
It's called the Spindly Pindly.
The Wiggly Wiggly. Yeah. Anyway, I don't want people looking up. Because it's embarrassing.
It's called the How Patrick Troughton Died.
It's called Who Jack Fancied When He Was 13.
There you go. Carry on.
So, anyway.
It's very deep, this commentary today. Far reaching. Carry on.
Remember message boards?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I was, in fact, the only other one I was ever on for any length of time
was
the Epic. First of all, 31 Days in May.
Yeah.
That was an experience. Mm. Tell them, Jack.
It was a TV cream experiment in doing a... So this is back in the day when people looked at TV cream.
When was that? 2001?
Probably, 2001, 2002. So we decided for 31 Days in May, a la the old... Do you remember the old radio one? They used to do that competition, 31 Days in May.
Not really, but...
They used to do it in the month of May.
Yeah, there were big prizes to be won.
31 Days in May.
Was it William the Plonker?
I can't remember. But anyway, so we did. We decided.
I'm William Plonker.
So we decided for all of May we were going to do a message board.
It was on a Yahoo group.
Yeah,
was it about your bit in the middle?
And now it's time for the sloppy bit. But anyway, so we did that, and that's where I had created Site to Search.
The list of 10 things that sometimes gets posted. 31 Days of Good Great Memories.
That's right.
I have created Sice and Much. I have cancer. And most especially, unsubscribe me. Because it was on a Yahoo group, which when you signed up to it, now if you were like me, sitting in an office all day with nothing to do, literally, you just looked at the group and you could read the messages one at a time.
Yeah.
Most people signed up to it, which meant they got their emails delivered to them.
It was the digest, wasn't it?
Yeah. No, there was individual emails.
Okay. Right.
You could sign up to a digest, but most people just went, oh, remember Bagpuss? Yeah, 31 Days in May, fucking Dillion. Right, and signed up to it. The problem was, every single person who emailed, when they signed up, everybody got the email.
Right.
And then this fantastic thing started.
This is like the ones that we get from our colleagues in the union.
Yes.
Yeah.
In the hospital.
But it's better than that. It's actually better than that. Because what would happen is, and it became this sort of self-sustaining avalanche of shit.
It was really mad, wasn't it?
Because, and I really wasn't involved in the site back then. So I wasn't in the admin and bullet or anything.
I'm going to claim, by the way, that 31 Days in May was my idea. I think it might have been.
Right.
Anyway, carry on.
So I was just watching it with wry amusement. Because what happened was, people would sign up. And then there were other people, you know, it was hugely popular.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, you know, hundreds back and thousands of people
signed
up for it. Yeah,
we used to get big hits
on
TV Crime back in the day.
So, but then everybody started to get the emails to say they'd signed up.
Yeah.
And then when somebody said something and replied to something, so then some people started to unsubscribe from it.
Yeah.
But they didn't seem to see how to turn subscriber. So they just used to send emails saying, unsubscribe me. The one that sticks in my mind was a guy called Glenn. I don't know why that name sticks, because he was sending them like every 10 minutes.
Was he?
Fucking unsubscribe me. Right. Fucking unsubscribe me, you cunts. The problem was that when people started to then email unsubscribe, they started to get fired out. And then people responded to them and then threw them back and bounced them back. And it just became this
mess.
Fucking tsunami of cyber.
Finial shouting, I'm
Finial
Spartacus.
Thoughts. That was another one of their titles.
Final Thoughts.
Final Thoughts. Does something about, does anyone remember Headbangers Ball? But the best one I still think was Eye of Creative Sight.
I have created Sight as Such. I mean, there was a lot of good stuff in there.
There was a lot of good stuff.
My only website that I, a message board that I was ever a member of, I eventually left after some unpleasantness.
Was that the horror? Or?
Yeah, there was some unpleasantness around what the Jews did to deserve being attacked.
So,
the point being, there was someone who left that. I eventually, of course, went back on.
Oh, yeah.
But when he left it, he decided to tell everybody what he thought of them.
Oh, brilliant.
Apparently I was all right. But others not so.
Do you know why?
Is it like the bit where Glenn goes mad in the thick of it?
Yeah, absolutely.
And
yeah.
Then you are like, who is it?
No, he hated all of them,
he says, you're nothing. That's it.
Yeah, no, yeah, absolutely. No, it's just, but the other thing was,
Boromir's dead.
I was still at the stage there where I would actually argue stuff with people, which I don't really do on the internet anymore, you know. So, no, I don't think I'll find out, you know, but now I just, that doesn't fucking matter. I learnt my
lesson.
Did
you get away with it because you're the good guy?
The good guy.
So, anyway, we were talking about the Lord of the Rings message.
So, that was the only other message board that was on.
Okay. So, let's get back to the question about the controversies.
So, on this message board.
Yeah.
And being, you know, in the kids, you won't remember, the pre-internet era. Mm-hmm. You only ever talk to people that you knew.
Yeah.
You didn't have the ability, because it was quite weird talking to people you didn't know.
Yeah.
It's not like you, it's like the internet is the equivalent of just opening the phone book and phoning somebody and saying, do you remember Bagpuss?
In fact, you just used to sometimes talk because it was somebody you don't know. And that was the thing.
Yeah, but like going into town and just standing in town and then people just saying to each other, you know, do you remember Moss Chops? Yeah. You know, it was like, what?
It was like someone signing up to you and saying, have you created Sight and Such?
What is this line? I can't hear it.
Have you created Sight? I have created Sight as Such.
I have created Sight as Such. I don't know. If you're
like
out there.
Like a website as such.
Yeah, if you're out there, Mr. I have created Sight as Such.
Oh, please get in touch.
Get in touch.
Although we won't understand the email.
It sounds a bit like Ed Balls, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Anyway,
the point is, back then, none of my pals were into Tolkien. So, I suddenly find myself in an office with a computer. First kind of had a computer of my own. And
what year are we talking about here then?
2000? No, it must have been earlier than that. When was the first Tolkien film out? The first Lord of the Rings film out?
2001.
Yeah. So it'll be 2000.
Okay.
So 2000, I think, message boards, I've heard about them on Newsround.
Uh-huh. On the information.
25 at this point. Yeah.
On the information superhighway.
On the internet.
He's taping it for the wank tape.
Yeah.
In case it was a Howard Stapleford episode.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's Paul McDowell, fuck it.
And anyway, I found out there is actually a Lord of the Rings message board.
Mm.
And
what's
man,
it called?
This is, and that's when I suddenly discovered the world of the internet.
Yeah.
The disappointing thing about it was that there was a lot of sections, and there was one section. There were sections about the books and then the films, because the films were this big, exciting, upcoming thing, which is why I was looking. I was excited about the films coming. And then the downfall of it was the general discussion thread, which was basically the politics.
Any other
thread.
Business.
And it was basically a lot of white, middle-class, American cunts, teenagers, raging against the world for not being as white and cunty as they were. It was pretty awful. But anyway, most of it was quite good. But what but one of the things, and I think this is what you're referring to.
I don't know. It was an open question. I wasn't actually leaving you anywhere with it.
Does the Balrog have wings?
Ah, okay, back to that. Oh, yes.
Now, that...
I remember talking about this before.
And this is the sort of thing that only fans can get into. Because...
You don't see it leaving Newsnight that one, do you?
No. And it was like this...
The Balrog have wings?
Here's a dance.
Gavin Isler.
Does the Balrog have wings? Anyway, the point is that was one of the main topics of contention.
Yeah.
Now, I used to say that it was quite easy to resolve because the fucking book says it's got wings. Uh-huh. But it kind of doesn't, it doesn't. It says shadows spread about it like wings. But there's another reference to wings. It's wings lifted. And that was still region when I left
it. Could it have useless wings like the demons in Doctor Who?
Possibly.
Yeah.
But that's why, you see that there? Yeah. The one we just saw. There's a bit where it sort of jumps up and flies. Mm-hmm. It doesn't describe that it does that. Right. And actually...
So does it fly?
No, it doesn't fly in the book. It just walks in the book.
Okay.
And in the films, it's a really excellent rendering of it in the Jackson film.
I remember that being quite good. Although it owes an awful lot to the demon from one of my favourite films, The Night of the Demon.
Yeah, Night of the Demon, yeah. But here's the thing, fucking desperate fact fans.
These cunts are cartoons. What's going on?
There are descriptions of Balrogs, because Balrogs are the same kind of demons that Sauron is.
Okay.
They were originally all the same.
Is Sauron the old baddie guy or the big eye?
Well, the big eye. Saruman is Christopher
Lee.
No, the big eye.
I always thought you had the names too.
They are too similar. You're quite right.
If you had a better
editor.
They're too
similar.
Yeah, they're similar. You want to give them something.
Oh, no, that's deliberate.
You should call an editor back in 1950s. Professor Tolkien.
Yeah, sloppy.
I'm fine with Sauron, but when it comes to the Christopher Lee cunt, you should call him Titty Biscuits.
It's deliberate, but it's interesting you pick up on that, because by around this point in this version, they start to call him Arrowman.
Uh-huh.
Not in the subtitles.
Wasn't that an 80s Glenn Larson series? Arrowman!
Yes. No.
Simon McCorkindale is Arrowman.
He's a dead man, isn't he?
Anyone says a bad word against Simon McCorkindale, I very quickly say to you, and I think I've said it before, I point you to his performance in Nigel Neal's Beasts,
in which he is fucking brilliant.
I'm an animal.
I am pure mad.
Yeah, in this, it still says Saruman in the subtitles, but you'll notice that eventually they start to call him Arrowman. And I think probably, because there's no question that it's anything to do with, like, fucking copyright or anything, but I suspect it's because of the reason that you've stumbled across my friends.
Well done, Craig.
The two alike,
except that Sauron never gets a mention after the start of it.
So the Balrog debate.
Yeah, the Balrog debate. I just mentioned it because it was something that, I mean, they were still fucking arguing about it when I stopped visiting the site about 2 years later, despite the fact that for some reason they hadn't picked up on the definitive answer I had given them 2 years before. Yeah. I don't know what they were thinking.
Wow. And so
pinned text.
And so what is considered the high watermark of Tolkien adaptations? Is it the Radio 4 adaptation?
No, I think it's probably the Jackson film.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah, because it's one thing to do somebody who does hospital radio, radio's great, it's fantastic. But it's one thing to describe in audio, a battle.
Yes.
It's quite another thing to fucking actually stage it. To stage it well is awesome.
Some of the orcs do look a wee bit like Papa Lazarus, don't they?
They do look a bit.
Hello, Dev. Hello, Frodo. I'm going to take it home now. I remember the start of the Fellowship of the Ring and the bit when they're doing the thing with all the pikes and whatnot as they're all standing in a row and watching fucking hell.
Well, this is why I think it would be pretty churlish of a Tolkien fan to think that it's not the high watermark. Because if you're a big fan, That scene of the siege of Mount Doom is only glancingly referred to in the book and then in the one of the addendums, or the addenda, I should say. So the actual, to actually see that laid out like that is fucking amazing. Mm. And that somebody would go to that effort to show that, you'd have to be a bit of a dick to think that that's as good as it gets.
And the Battle of Helm's Deep in the second one was very good. I liked that.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Number three. There's a problem they have in number two, which is, remember when they're going through the woods, two of the guys, the wee guy from Scotland, Billy Boyd.
Aye, Merry and Pippin.
Aye, and they're going through the woods, and Gandalf comes back, and he's Gandalf the White, as opposed to the Grey, or whatever. Then it cut, I think it's just to do with the cut that you see in the cinema. The next scene, they're just walking along like nothing's happened, and you'd expect them to say something like, that was quite funny, Gandalf turning up again, wasn't it? Another one, even if the other one said, I don't want to talk about it because it's kind of weird.
But bear in mind, I know what you mean, but bear in mind, it is a world that has immortal fucking elves in it, and, you know,
does it?
Wizards that are, but yeah, elves are immortal.
In our world? Here, in Shettleston?
Yeah, no, not in Shettleston.
They live to
downhill.
They live to 53, and that's it.
Nothing is immortal.
So maybe the reaction, but I know what you mean. No, it does skip through that quite a bit. The other thing is, there is a real problem. In fact, Ian McKellen's even said this, which is that Gandalf the White's a real dick.
Aye.
Gandalf the Grey's a good guy.
He's not the good guy.
But he's a bit of a tiresome fucking bossy prick.
And there is a bit at the Battle of Helm's Deep, I think it is. Oh, it's in the third one, after he's come back. When they're all sort of fighting with swords and getting in there, and he suddenly goes and smacks down his staff and obliterates thousands of them, and you think, just keep doing that.
No, he doesn't.
He does. He fucking releases some power from his staff.
No, that's when he rides out. When they're coming back from what's his name? Is it Chris Wenham? David Wenham?
Christopher Wenham?
Seen Bean's brother. Faramir. Anyway, it's a bit where they've come back, the city's been overrun by orcs, not Minas Tirith, but the one in the river. And they all come back, and Walter Bishop says, you need to get back out there and sort it, you know, because you're a bunch of shitebags. And okay, so they go, and he's just like, alright, fine. And they go out. When they're riding back, they're getting attacked by the Nazgul, and Gandalf rides out to them, and shines his staff and chases them away.
Can't he do that more often?
No, he can't. Because the point of Gandalf, and this is the difficulty, as we know, of an adaptation, which is how much exposition do you want to put in it? Because the point of Gandalf is, with the exception of Sauron, Gandalf is easily the most powerful person in Middle-earth. But the point of his entire character is not to use his power. It's to inspire other people to do what they're supposed to do.
It's a bit like me.
Because otherwise you're... Because otherwise you're just replacing one form of power with another form
of
power.
That's my view, yeah.
And that's the whole point.
No, that's interesting. I wish to point out, though, that I've known him for quite a few years now, and I've yet to be inspired by Jack. Are you inspired by him?
I've been fingered by him, but...
Was it like this?
That's a type of inspiration.
It wasn't inspiring. Can you smell?
Jack, look at that in your face.
Smeagol in here, in this version, it strikes me as quite similar to Smeagol in the Peter Jackson version.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So is that taken from here? Or
isn't
is it
he Gollum?
Well, Smeagol is Gollum. Smeagol's his real name.
Yeah. So, does Peter Jackson...
But him knowing that is what... Him knowing that's his name is what makes him win, isn't it?
What?
Doesn't he win because he knows he's called Smeagol?
No. Win what?
He beats him in this sort of riddle competition.
No. That's in The Hobbit. He doesn't know his name.
But that's right.
He doesn't know his name's Smeagol then.
So?
And he beats him in the riddle competition because he says, what have I got in my pocket under his breath?
Uh-huh. He says, a big lap of a cock.
And he says, I don't know. What's it smell like? Slightly sweet, but a wee bit metallic.
That's a bit bums.
Wee bums.
Is that a jammy dodge or glued to an Airfix model?
A little into bums.
Damn you!
So did they rip off Smeagol from this film then?
I think they did, probably. It's very
that's
similar.
That's not really rotoscoping now. That's just a man in black
and
white.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But this was when, you see, I mean, this was when they'd really started to get limitations on the budget. And as you said, it would literally have taken them years to animate all of this. Mm. But But I like the, I like all this stuff. The thing that lets it down is not that, it's the background. The sky and the landscape is very flat.
Now, who inspired Tolkien then? So his whole world of elves and goblins and pixies.
Unfortunately, largely Hitler.
But his whole world of elves and pixies and all that kind of stuff and wizards and things. Because it always sort of feels like it seems to start with him.
He always said that
there was colossal sexual abuse on an industrial scale in his childhood.
He also said it was he called it an elfinesse entirely of his own creation. But he's clearly influenced by
Wagner,
Spencer, and Wagner, and you know, the Fairy Queen, and Marlowe, and people like that. I mean, it's pretty obvious. But a lot of it. Now, this is where it gets back to the language that I was talking about at the start. A lot of the characters' words, the names of them, etymologically, are taken from Anglo-Saxon.
Yeah, there's a lot of old Norse myths and things in them.
Yeah, there's a lot of bits of Beowulf and things like that. Mm.
I did Old English at university.
Did you?
Part of my first year English language.
I wish you.
Well, I only remember one word from it, I can only pronounce it in a vaguely Australian accent because the person who taught us Old English, she was Australian. She was lovely.
Was it Gala?
No, it was Hirahuda.
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 What does that mean?
It's booty or spoils of war.
Wow.
Hirahuda. Not booty. As in Beyonce.
Shake your Hirahuda.
And Sir Aragorn fought Beyonce. The Lady Beyonce and her booty.
So you, but apart from Lord of the Rings and Tolkien, you must have had a little dabble in fantasy when you were growing up.
With the Australian Old English teacher?
No. So you must have, like, I don't know, like Terry Pratchett or David Eddings.
I've never read any of their books.
Ursula Le Guin. Le Guin.
I read there was the Earthsea trilogy when I was quite young, about maybe 11.
Did you take to that?
Yeah. But I more liked science fiction and horror.
Why is it? What, have they done films about of the Ursula?
Never. They've never done.
Why have they never done?
Do you know she's still alive?
Is she now?
Yeah. No, she's failed.
They have done. They did an animation.
All right.
Did they?
Of Wizards of Earthsea.
Not a proper film.
It's not very good. Oh, I don't know, 80s or something.
They did them all on Jack and Ori and things like that.
Yeah,
they're very good.
I read the. That's one of the few other fantasy books I've read. I read Wizards of Earthsea. Is it Wizards of Earthsea?
Yeah.
In school.
The Wizard of Earthsea.
Wizard of Earthsea, I can't remember.
I read that when I was 9.
I quite enjoyed it. Yeah. I mean, I didn't read Lord of the Rings till I was about 20.
Wow.
What about, how would you classify Frank Herbert's Dune? Is it space opera?
Now we're getting controversial.
Yeah, we are, aren't we? You're a fan of Dune, aren't you?
Well, I'm a fan of Dune, only Dune.
Yeah.
And before we get your opinion on it, which of course is what we want most,
what matters,
of all, did those sorts of things fall into the chat on your Tolkien website?
That's actually more true than you think. I don't give a fuck what you think about it.
Shut up, you. I'm not giving him my opinion. I'm asking him.
No. So there is no Tolkien Frank Herbert crossover, Jack, for heaven's sake.
It's interesting, isn't it? Okay, so
there used to be. Was there not this in your message board where there would be like threads that people had started or areas of discussion that people had started that probably seemed like a good idea, like what other influences, and nobody ever posted in them because they were too busy arguing about the death penalty over a general discussion.
It was mostly a great board with lots of really, really nice people. There was one or two disputatious folk who kind of killed it to an extent. I don't think it's really operating very much anymore.
What was the parameters of the board?
Sorry, the tree beard's not very good.
Oh no, it's not very good.
It doesn't fit the description very well at all.
So how did you define what was in and what was out then on your...
Well, I mean, a lot of it was centred...
Who was a good guy?
Yeah. A lot of it was centred around, you know, Hammer and Amicus and things like that. Mm-hmm. And lots of
Hammer and Amicus? Who would want to Hammer Amicus?
All those things. But you were going off different directions as well.
Well,
but
as you
say,
about M.R. James?
Yeah, I started a thread about why don't we talk about the stories one by one, and that died in its arse.
Mm.
But, there's lots of great Montagu Rhodes.
See? Mm. No Clive.
He's a bit of a specialised subject to me.
Is he?
Yeah.
Yeah, in fact, at Christmas we should watch one of the ghost stories.
I've suggested that every Christmas since we started doing these, and we've never done it yet.
Have we?
We'll definitely do that. We'll do it as an extra,
though.
We'll
do Whistle and Come To then, suggest.
Oh, yeah, I've suggested it in the past, but we just never got around to it.
Whistle and Come To,
No.
You say that's not a very good adaptation.
Do you not like the Jonathan Miller version?
No, I don't. I like things in it. like how it's made. I like the sort of stuff on the beach and the kind of nightmare quality. Yeah, that's all good. But what I don't like about it is as much as that's the Hurdy-Gurdy's in Lost Hearts.
It's very hauntological.
It is very hauntological. Well, depends on your definition of it, you know.
Well, apparently it's in the correct definition of it.
Yeah, the correct definition, the Derridean correct definition, it's not.
Although, can I say that it wasn't actually Derrida who coined ontology?
It was.
It wasn't.
It was in a speech in 1993.
No, there's...
Because it's a joke on ontology, which are homophones in French.
No, there is, that is disputed.
Is it?
Yeah.
This is the bit. Sorry, I wanted to come back to this because I said I was going to flag it up earlier.
Okay, here we go.
Oh, you missed it. The point is, there was a drawing there of the Balrog.
Oh, no.
But they've not got the money to animate it by this point.
Right.
So it's these drawings.
Oh, wow, yeah. Okay.
And the drawing of the Balrog is like the Jackson film.
Oh, right, okay.
It's a long face. Full of fire and a longer, straighter mouth.
Well, they're really eking out the money here.
Well, that's the point. That's why I wanted to flag up. Right, okay. And now back to Jack being wrong.
I think I need to go through things back in order.
The
Jack Derrida story is a good one.
When, you weren't accepting this.
I've been taught this, but I've been told this by a lecturer at university that Jack Derrida had spoken at Edinburgh University a few years before. And he gave a talk, and he basically read for 2 hours in French his speech.
Boom, gone.
And he read it, and he finished it, and he looked up and said, "Are there any questions?"
Uh-huh.
And there was silence.
Uh-huh.
And he said, "There are never any questions, and anyway, the author of the text is not here to answer them," and walks off. And that is your entire post-structuralist theory.
Also, and can I just to add to that? That is also the inspiration behind the song "Cedar Bee."
C'est la you, c'est la me, c'est la vie,
c'est la les suppléments, c'est la vie,
c'est la vie, ontology. It's great. And going back beyond that, M.R. James, there was something we should do. No, yeah, why I don't like the Jonathan Miller one. There's a very, very. The main reason I don't like it, as much as I love Michael Horden, if you know the story of "O Whistle and I'll Come to You, My Lad," the point of the book is that the professor, who is the main character, Professor Perkins, is a rationalist and a stuffed shirt and hates the paranormal, hates any mention of it. He tells people off for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Goblins and then he grumpy, he doesn't punch children. Yeah. And then he gets... that's not true. Daniel never did that. He's a lovely man. And then when he goes through the story, by the end of it, as it says at the end in that wonderfully... ironic Jamesian way, his views on these things are not as sure as they once were.
Wow.
And that's the point, whereas if you watch the Michael Horden, Jonathan Miller one, he's batshit crazy from the beginning.
Yeah.
And therefore it's not an interesting film.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
And he makes lots of noise.
But it's a very very atmospheric.
Yeah, and it was done for like Horizon or Arena, one of those programmes.
Yeah, was it not Monitor or something?
Monitor. Yeah, it was done for Monitor,
Yeah. So, and pulling it all back, we still haven't had your view on Frank Herbert's Dune.
Oh, no, well, I'll get to that. Well, let's get to that in a minute. Okay. We're now at Rohan.
Uh-huh. Oh, but the place where you buy the nice...
Yeah, you get nice shoes.
My dad was fucking mad for a bit of Rohan.
Very excited.
So was my English teacher at school, into the Rohan.
Much more faithful here than in the Jackson films. Because in the Jackson films, you recall Bernard Hill is sort of... possessed by a spirit of Saruman of thing, which does not in the books.
Spirit
and what does that give the story?
Well, I think they try to use it to explain Saruman's control of Theoden, because why would the king be controlled by him otherwise and all that? Actually, he's just an old man who's swayed by, you know, the nasty advice. I think there's possibly meant to be a message in there about people, you know, like leaders who mean well, taking bad advice and doing the wrong thing, but thinking they're doing the right thing and all that sort of thing. It's just one of those things that jars me in the Jackson films, where everything has to be the result of magic.
Yeah, it has to have a supernatural reason.
And it's not actually it's not really the point of the book, because the point of Lord of the Rings effectively is that if you succeed, you're banishing magic.
Mm.
From the entire world. The three rings fade, the ones that Galadriel and Gandalf and all them have. All of the other rings are gone, the elves disappear, it's the age of men, it's all done.
And it's done by hard work, fortitude, and companionship and brotherhood and all that sort of stuff.
And what you've got is a world that's rational and human. and that's it.
Get back in your box, Mr. Hitler.
Yeah. So it's,
although maybe sympathetic to some of his comments upon.
So it's
not
it,
me, but
it just seems weird that he's trying to that Jackson's always. But I mean, you know, that it's crowd pleasing stuff, you know, and all that. And Benatel's very good at it.
I love Benatel. He does a good line in Angry Kings and Dukes.
Yeah,
he's
he
great
does.
In,
yeah, he's very good. Falls, yeah,
is the angriest. He's like you.
The angriest Earl of Norfolk fucking
he's,
ever.
He's the Earl of
Fuck off.
The Earl of Tollcross. It's like raging.
The other thing that the books the Jackson films do, which is they change the nature of what the two towers means.
Is there like three towers?
Well, they're in separate places in the books.
Well,
aren't
the
they?
Two towers are the Tower of Barad-dûr, which is where Sauron is in Mordor.
The Tower of Barad-dûr.
Barad-dûr, not Barad-dûr. Barad-dûr.
Yeah.
Barad-dûr.
Barad-dûr.
The Tower of Barad-dûr
and then the Dark
in Mordor. Tower. Well, that's the Dark. That's the Dark Tower.
Okay.
In Mordor, yeah. And the Tower of Isengard, which is Saruman's tower, right?
Not the Blackpool Tower.
Not the Blackpool Tower. No,
it's not as dark as that.
Not the Coconut Tower. But in and I think to try and simplify things, Jackson and Fran Walsh and Philippa Boyens, you know, the screenplay. They come up with the theory that, you know, Saruman's going over to Sauron's side. There's the union of the two towers, and that's what they're fighting against. Actually, that's not in the book. The point of the book is that Saruman wants the ring. And he wants to fight Sauron. He wants to be the Dark Lord.
I thought they were mates.
He's sort of...
That got lost on me.
Yeah, he starts off...
I thought he was doing the bidding of Sauron.
No. That's in the film. That's not in the book. In the book, he starts...
He's trying to become more powerful than Sauron.
In the book,
he
starts out... Certainly starts out as in trying to set himself in opposition to Sauron. But he's nowhere near strong enough unless he has the ring.
If he achieved that, might he have been a more benevolent character?
No.
Or was he always a bad
cunt? No. He wasn't always a bad cunt. But it's made very clear, because he starts to cut down the trees, he starts to breed orcs, that he's the influence of the ring, even though he doesn't have it, is beginning to turn him evil. There's a point in the books where I think Boromir says, well, why don't we just stand back and let the two of them slog it out? And they say, well, that's pointless, because one or the other will just come out of it stronger. So you actually have to deal with.
Do they in fact sum
in front
it up as in the poster for Alien vs Predator by saying, "Whoever wins, we lose."
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So there's this, you know, that's what I like is the fact that in this version they don't do that,
right?
And it speaks to the fact that it doesn't really succeed in its storytelling mission, but it. Tries its best to stay as faithful as it can to the book.
Some of the animation is fucking terrible, though.
Oh no! When they run it, when they start to run out of money,
I mean that was
goes,
just a zoom
terrible.
On
yeah.
a on a still
because they've no money.
Yeah,
But that's not. I mean, it's not really Bakshi's fault that he starts to run out of money, unless he just bunked it away on the first couple of reels.
Crayons.
Yeah. Those tins of pencils.
Yeah.
Those tins of pencils. I always
Carandash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the point I'm making is, just sorry to finish that thought, is that's where this, I think, deserves plaudits over the Jackson films, because it doesn't do that horrible thing where it just tries to be a faithful adaptation and fuck the audience because this is what's in the book. It tries to do it the best way, which is leave out the stuff that doesn't work, streamline the story, but don't lose the point. And there's actually a couple of bits in the Jackson films that not only cut things out, but actually change the story. And unless you're Orson Welles, we just fucking make up it as you go along. Mm-hmm. You kind of want to at least have the point of the story kept.
So what about Frank Herbert's Dune then?
What about Frank Herbert's Dune, Craig?
I've never read it.
So is it a fantasy?
Really?
Is it a
no,
fantasy
I know, you'd have thought I would have read it.
Is it a
have
fantasy?
You ever read Dune?
No.
Am I the only person at this table that's read Dune?
It seems that way.
Is it
Good
a fantasy
Lord.
Novel?
I may read it.
Is it in the same...
I think it is, yeah. What else would it be?
Is the Lord of the Rings science fiction?
No, it's not science fiction.
Okay. In the same way that basically Star Wars is a fantasy.
Which
is set in space.
I suppose.
It's a space fantasy.
But I think the difference is that somehow this doesn't feel like...
Science fiction films are rival.
Well, so Dune to me is set on an alien planet. This somehow isn't, even though it's not our planet.
Yeah, because this is... I think... Well, I'm probably not got the perspective for this, but would you say that this is sort of set on? Is suggests that it's at some point in the past, then this planet.
Are they aliens? That's the question.
No, I've always thought it's kind of an alternate version, alternate universe, Dark Ages.
Mm.
Really,
right?
There's a weird thing that crops up in some of the extra writings, not in the Silmarillion or anything, where there's meant to be this medieval. Saxon monk, not Saxon, that would be too late for medieval. But anyway, a medieval English monk called. Is it. Alfred? It's got that AE thing in his name, Alfred.
Mm.
Anyway, and he sets out on a ship, you know, he goes fishing or something, and he ends up in Middle Earth.
Does he?
Yeah, and there's not very much more than that. You know, it's meant to be like a chronicle where he sets out. Because, I mean, if you get into the batshit insane.
Mm-hmm.
Talking stuff which I quite like, which is, you know, like all to do with, you know, the far west being removed from the circles of the world, and because the elves used to be able to just sail to the west where all the gods and all that live, but it get taken away and all that, and there's a thing called the Straight Road which they still sail, but it takes them beyond the circles of the world, you know, it's a sort of a Viking almost kind of thing, like the Rainbow Bridge.
And
there's a suggestion that this Alfred, or whatever his name is, fuck, I can't remember his name, accidentally gets onto this road and ends up and goes to Middle Earth and all that sort of thing.
That's interesting that you unnecessarily connected yourself then. Saxons were in the medieval Middle Ages. The Middle Ages go from the fall of the Roman Empire right through to the Renaissance. So there's a 1,000-year period, but you have the early, middle, and late Middle Ages.
But would a Saxon have been?
They'd have been 5th, 6th century.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you've got the fall of the Holy Roman Empire, but you still have the
not
the
a bit in England though.
Yeah, you'd have had monks in England. Probably 8th, 9th century.
But
yeah, I suppose
the early, when was the Venerable Bede?
9th century, I think.
Yeah,
but the early Middle Ages is as close to.
I thought maybe Saxons would be on that.
The early Middle Ages is as close to Cleopatra as she is to us now. So actually, I think
we like my dad as well.
So I think the distinction
coming
between fantasy and science fiction, right? There's two things. Number one, right? Fantasy is not set on another planet.
Yes.
And number two, you get a map.
Oh yeah, okay. Oh, it's fucking Lord of the Rings riddles
with maps. You could ask the same thing about.
But you get a map in
about
June.
Game of Thrones.
That's fantasy.
That's a fantasy.
Yeah, but is it set on an alien planet?
No.
No, I don't think so.
And you get a map.
You get a map.
But you get a map in June.
But again.
But it's certainly an alien planet.
Game of Thrones is explicitly set around the notion of the Wars of the Roses. That was what inspired him.
Right.
Game of Thrones?
Then he's just used that as the basis to build an entire world. Yeah. I think you world build around Earth, basically.
Right.
Dune isn't a world built around Earth.
No, that's on.
So that's why. Does that make it a space fantasy? Because it's not science fiction, because there's no science in it.
Yeah, okay, space fantasy.
Because actually, the point of Dune, in a lot of ways, is that there is no science in it. Because there's no computers or
tick-tick.
And a lot of science fiction, of course, doesn't take place in space or off the Earth. Yeah. Well, I bought one of my favourite science fiction films last week. I've still to watch it yet. The New Zealand film, because I've seen it before.
Okay.
The New Zealand film, The Quiet Earth.
Okay. Dune is very good, you know.
It's a great film.
The book, the first book. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll give it a go.
It's interesting. It's quite well written. It's not as well written as this.
No.
As Lord of the Rings. Which is, if there's one thing. There's one that really fucks me off. Which is that there's this presumption by cunts like Tony Parsons. That things like Tolkien are public school and posh. Well, first of all, that presumes an awful lot about readers. That they should that your background should determine what you read, which really fucks me off. Because I tell you what my background does determine. I don't read his fucking books.
No, that's true, yeah.
But anyway,
London wanker.
And it really makes no sense.
No,
but then he's also
a middle class grammar school boy.
Yeah, he's also the person that complained that the Goon Show was hopelessly public school.
Yeah,
where everybody involved in it, with the exception of Michael Bentine, was like relentlessly calm as muck.
Absolutely.
You're a fucking dick. Anyway, one thing you can say about Lord of the Rings is it's very well written. It's not an easy read. You know, it doesn't pander to children, certainly. And it's not like the Silmarillion, because he didn't really write the Silmarillion as a narrative. It's just bits. And I'll happily admit that some of the Silmarillion is turgid nonsense. When you start to get into how they fucking created the moon and hung it from a fucking tree and all that, you're like, oh, none of this is necessary. But there are other parts of it, like this story of Beren and Lúthien, which actually I just saw today is being released next month as a book. He's found other writings. He's always finding other writings. Yeah. It's Christopher Tolkien.
Okay. There was one a few years ago, wasn't there?
There was one, the Children of Húrin. Yeah. The problem with the Children of Húrin is it's not actually that interesting a story.
And it sounds rude.
Húrin. It's not. It doesn't live up to its name. Túrin, one of his children, Túrin Túrinbar, who kills the first dragon, Túrin Túrinbar Dagnir Glaurunga, is fucking great. That's what's written on his gravestone. But anyway, Beren and Lúthien, the story of Beren and Lúthien, is a genuinely beautiful piece of writing and is really moving and is just
beautiful. Is that a sort of Tristram and Isolde sort of thing?
Yeah, it's like Lúthien is the daughter of King Thingol and Melian the Maya. Beren is just Beren is the son, is one of the sons of Húrin, I think. And you know they're this sort of thing where he's a man.
The consequences of her.
It's a bit like Siegfried and Brunhilde, where Beren is a man who's a lordly man, but Lúthien is way above his station and is so beautiful and divine that wherever she walks, fucking flowers spring out the ground and all that. Anyway, they fall for each other. Thingol won't let them marry unless Beren brings the Silmarillion. Which is the Silmarillion, the one of Silmaril, which is one of the three Silmarils that's come from it, blah, 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 which is one Morgoth has them in his hand. But the point is, he's set an impossible quest.
Right.
The two of them achieve the quest, blah, blah, blah. But it's beautifully written.
Which is a story that has the character called, and I generally remember this quite clearly.
No, don't.
And it's not fucking Tom Bombadil, which is my favourite name. Oh. But there was one with Keely, who was the Kenko of Milicano.
I think you'll find that Camilla, the mistress of Batmagirra, set sail with Erendil the Mariner to find the lost realm of
Now, when The Hobbit was released...
There is actually an Erendil the Mariner, right?
When The Hobbit was released, was it a big hit?
Yes.
And as such, was there a bit of excitement around
Yes,
the
very,
Lord of the Rings?
Very much.
So how
and much... Originally, The Lord of the Rings was supposed to be released in almost like a serial.
Right.
And Tolkien didn't even want it released. Didn't even want it released... In three books, he wanted it released in one book.
Bad boy.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he said, we could make a fortune this way.
Yeah, well, basically.
I think my dad had it was an early hardback version of the three volumes, kind of dark green.
Yeah.
Is that the original one?
No, probably the first revised edition.
Okay.
Do you remember?
The revised edition has the addendums in it, which is when that's when they really fucking started hitting pay dirt.
Right.
Do you remember the Weetabix Doctor Who series?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was good, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And Superman as well. They did a Superman. Yeah.
Bearing in mind that up until the fucking Harry Potter books came along, Lord of the Rings was selling 5 million copies a year.
Yeah.
Every year.
So what
was the biggest selling fantasy or fiction.
So what is the Tolkien fans' position on Harry Potter then?
That doesn't mean anything to one way or the other.
I remember having an argument.
Films aren't as good.
I remember having an argument with a friend and colleague of us in the hospital. And he thought the first Harry Potter film was better than the first Lord of the Rings film.
Jesus
and
Christ.
I felt the opposite. I said no, I thought the Fellowship of the Ring was actually a really good picture. And I didn't
The Fellowship of the Ring is an amazing film.
Yeah, it's good. I really liked it. Yeah.
The problem with the Harry Potter, Philosopher's Stone?
Yeah.
Yes.
Is what I was saying earlier, which is that it's really fucking boring because they follow every single beat of the book, because they've obviously thought we better get everything in, because that's what
the other problem was. None of them could act yet, which they both can. Well, the main ones that are still going can act well now, but then they can't.
Yeah. Yeah. But it does that. It does that thing that you really don't want in a book adaptation, which is that it's a relief when it's finished.
Yeah, except that's what J.K. Rowling absolutely insisted upon.
Oh, it's just
she was fierce. Wow. She would not Back allow them to do it unless they get
yeah,
to go away for a minute.
I was just going to go away on a little pump.
So, what's the best deal in Warwick? Written by the Bee Gees, would you say?
Why do you have to be a windbreaker?
Did you? When I was did kids do that? That was the thing we were talking about before.
Do kids still do that?
Make up rude versions of songs.
Frere Jacques, concrete chips, soggy semolina, soggy semolina.
We did this before about Christmas carols, and you did that look then.
A ray of hope.
Here we go.
Knickers in the air. We had joy, we had fun, we had dangers on the run. Fun, dead at last, cause the bastards ran too fast, things like that.
Oh, that sort of thing. Did kids still do that, do you think?
I think so.
Did they just do it on their iPads?
Looking from a window above, some bastard gave me a shove. Did you see?
But that's the Bad in Nights, isn't it?
No. Bad Nights never did that. No, I don't think so. Baron Knights. And just to go on record, if I haven't before, it was only about 4 years ago that I realised that name is a joke.
Ah, you said that. You don't get the old novelty records anymore,
no.
Do you? Remember, he's the oldest swinger in town. Stuff like that. I can't remember his name, he was some northerner. When you pull up your rivals and your belly's in the way, you're the oldest swinger in town.
You know, one of the things that somebody pointed out to me a few years ago, which never occurred to me,
car,
is that if you listen to a comedy record, you remember when everybody released comedy record. Mm-hmm. I think probably the last one was maybe Vic Reeves.
Yeah.
Because
he did his album, which has the Summer of 75 in it.
That's right.
Tinker's Rucksack. My eyes were blue, my eyes were black. I smoked a church warden and I smoked some crack. Remember that one?
No,
I killed your wife. We buried her alive in the summer of 75.
I remember the summer of 69, which is actually closer to Tony Cleopatra than.
Anyway,
comedy records.
But I like comedy records, but yeah. One of the reasons it never occurred to me that I probably like them is that there's a guy who was a session musician told me this one. It was a pal of a pal. Especially the ones in the 60s and 70s had all the most amazing of musicians in the world.
I guess
it's
Rick Wakeman and all that.
Yeah, because
yeah.
They were, and like people like Vivian Stanshall playing the trumpet on them and all that, because they were just all session musicians.
Yeah.
So, you know, they just, Parlophone would just phone up and say, right, you got a session on tomorrow morning. Well, like, what is it? Well, they wouldn't even ask. They'd just come in and see who is it. Oh, it's Dick Emery. Right, fine, let's go.
They do
it's Tommy Cooper singing Don't Jump Off the Roof, Dad.
Right, they do that quite nicely in Inside Llewyn Davis.
Mm.
There's a bit when Llewyn gets $500 to come in and, or $50 or something to come in and play on a record, and it's with a folk band. Mm. Actually, there are two other guys in it. It's quite interesting because it's Justin Timberlake.
Mm.
Llewyn Davis is played by Oscar, what's his name, that plays in Star Wars?
Isaac.
Oscar Isaacs. And the other guy who does all the sort of comedy voices in it is the guy that plays, what's his name, the fucking baddie, Kylo Ren.
Oh, Adam Driver.
And they sing a song together, which is, Hey, Mr. Kennedy, oh, I don't want to go into outer space. And it's basically like 5 minutes rehearsal, and just play along and chase me. And the guy doing the, 3, 2, 1, no problem, please, is Kylo Ren. Yeah. It's a really good scene.
Wow.
But you're absolutely right. Yeah. And I've heard, what's his name, talk about that, Rick Wakeman, saying that, you know, he was a little bit Mark Bolan being a great guy and saying, there was one time he was right on his uppers, no money. And Mark Bolan said, well, what are you doing? He said, well, I'm not going to work on it. It was a milk bar or something. He said, just come around here.
Got
him to play fucking like three notes at the beginning of a record and get $50 for it.
Oh, Rick Wakeman did session work for my Uncle James.
Today?
Yeah, because he was just, you need the keyboards, all right, there he is.
Is he on Boone?
Oh, no, I can't remember what it was. Anyway, the point is, you know, that's what. But for all these records, which is, they all sound amazing.
Yeah.
You know, they're beautifully made. Yeah. And because a huge number of them were also produced by George Martin.
That's true. He did the Goons and stuff as well, didn't he?
The thing is, he was the Parlophone producer, EMI Parlophone. And the reason, and I don't care what any cunt who writes in and says is this, because this is fucking true, the reason George Martin was the producer and the reason they got the Beatles get signed to Parlophone is because Brian Epstein, his family had all those department stores in the Northwest.
Brian's.
Brian's stores. Brian's dad's. It was called
Brian's dad's.
Brian's dad's.
Brian's dad's stores.
Not on the Saturday. And they sold shitloads of records. So when he turns up with these with a fucking mop haired Fab Four, EMI were like, "Well, we better give him a contract. Better give him a contract, Bernie." Otherwise, his dad, I'm not going to sell him the records.
Oh, fantastic.
So, but the thing is, stick them on Parlophone, because that's a contract. But they're the joke. Mm-hmm. They do the comedy records. Because what they're actually doing is, it's a fucking comedy record.
Yeah, that's true.
Stick
it
on Parlophone. There's George Martin. Oh, actually, something in this.
Yeah.
Boom.
And then, boom, the Baron Knights.
What?
Whoa! Easy Tiger.
That was that was Baron.
I got such a big laugh that... Is that all right? Is it still working?
Yeah, it's all good.
I fucking fainted there. Whoa. That was the ghost of Hunter Davis kicking that over. Knights. That's not right about the Beatles. Anyway, this is where it all goes, like, horribly violent.
So which bit of
and
the...
And they seem to have stopped animating.
Yeah. Well, now, also
this
need to...
This good, though, this bit.
Yeah, it's very good. This, but
because it is quite brutal.
This is where this last section, which we weren't talking about, because for some reason we were talking. Oh, well, I was talking about the Beatles. The forces of darkness were driven from the river by the valiant friends of Frodo. No, that's just them that won Helm's Deep, but that's them run out of money.
Yeah,
and this is the end of the film.
So, but did they?
Yep.
But did they think the intention when they did this bit? Did they think they were coming back for another one?
Yes, yeah. Because there is footage of later on.
Ah.
Because years ago. I can't remember where I saw it. It wasn't on YouTube or anything. I stumbled across maybe a documentary. It might have been a Ralph Bakshi documentary or something. Where it had some scenes. It had scenes of Frodo back at Isengard. It had scenes of Frodo at Mount Doom and all those sort of things. So there clearly had been, you know, somebody had been working away, squirming away somewhere on some scenes for later.
So this is listening to the titles.
Yeah, let's have a look and see if there's names we recognise.
Fuck, we've covered a lot of ground.
We have, yeah, it's been good.
Yeah, it's quite
heavy. McPlunk, good guy!
Quite heavy.
Loop Police! Loop Police!
IRA Turek.
IRA Turek, isn't it? Well, I bet you I felt.
Well, look at these key animators, quite a lot of them.
Yeah.
Paul Smith,
Shinnewing there for half the film.
We haven't mentioned the score actually. There's a nice score. Do 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 do.
That should just fuck the copyright.
It's a nice score.
It's a nice score.
I've only seen it a couple of times, to be honest.
No, I haven't watched it.
It is a nice.
I watched it on a Sunday afternoon on Channel 4 once.
It's a very Sunday afternoon.
I can only ever remember it being Mark Bakshi. How do you think it was?
I don't know.
Do you think that was an exhaustive recruitment process?
I think he used the coincidence of having the same surname as his foot in the door.
No, I think I can only Peter Kebby. So I only remember it ever being on Channel 4.
Yeah,
it was a Channel 4 acquisition.
Yeah. Ralph Ferraro.
Right, here we go.
Here we are. Let's have a look. Christopher Guard.
Paul Squires. Oh, I'm
John
Frodo.
God, so many things John Hurt.
Yeah.
Dominic.
Anthony
Daniels.
Anthony Daniels. Yeah.
Fraser, Philip Stone.
Yay!
Wow.
Andrew Morrell, there you go.
Annette Crosby,
yeah, that's right.
That's Galadriel.
Yeah.
Wow.
Billy Barty.
I'll do the left hand side.
Wow.
One of you's do the right.
I'm looking at the right.
Peter Looney.
Yeah.
Like that.
Not seeing many
No.
Ruth Gay, she was great.
Do you think they actually hired Billy Barty because he is a midget? Thinking that midgets sound like midgets? There's some casting director going, better just get a midget. Has he finished? He's got a little window before UHF.
Did that do well at the box office then?
Yes.
Yeah.
Cost about $4 million, took about 30.
Wow. And so why didn't they do another one then?
Because they'd all fallen out massively by that time.
Basically. And of course, there's also. I think there might have been a. Oh, yeah, no, Ralph actually did have a massive falling out with Saul's aunt.
Yeah.
didn't he?
Yeah, it got quite nasty. There is a Return of the King animated film, apparently, but it was made by other people. Yeah. When sort of Saul's End, I think, bought it and put it out as, you know, the sequel will do it.
Weirdly, there is actually also a Ralph Bakshi Hobbit.
Aye, yeah, it was made before.
I've never seen it.
No.
Really?
I've never seen it.
So what's the best Tolkien fact that you haven't told us then, Chris? Let's see if we can end on a nice high.
The best Tolkien fact.
Or the
I've
best,
got one for you.
Or the best Chris Diamond Tolkien theory. Happy that.
Go
which
on.
Which effectively is fact, isn't it?
I'll fill you in with this one. That
okay, looking forward to this.
I think, as was mentioned many times during the making of this film, in the 2000s, that Christopher Lee, you know, knew Professor Tolkien personally. And I read the book, The Lord of the Rings, every year without fail.
Did he though?
No,
since most of his biographical stuff seems to have turned out to be bollocks.
Ah, exactly. I think he probably...
Not that it matters.
No, it's great. He's a great guy, but...
He did
say that he knew him. I met Professor Tolkien.
I'm sure he did.
And he also claimed that when I was tested to go into Eton, didn't go in the end, but when I was there, I met M.R. James.
Wow.
He said this all the time.
Bollocks.
But he did say that he read the book once a year.
I can believe that. Yeah, I do it as well.
And he started it on the 1st of January.
It's usually up in your
1st December.
It's usually up in your shunky.
No, it is. Yeah, yeah, in the pile there, up there.
So, which the best fight? Come on,
I don't know.
Chris Diamond talking.
I like things when names from Lord of the Rings turn up places like, you know, like when you'd said about. I know it's not talking, but
Game
you
of Thrones.
When people sort of take them and...
Where have you seen the names then?
One of the things that always occurs to me, although somebody told me that it was wrong and it was something else, but I do like the idea that of Brandywine Productions.
Mm-hmm. I think that is from that, isn't it?
Brandywine is the common name of the Baranduin River that runs through the Shire. I like things like that.
There's the apple. Pippin.
Was that what you were getting for?
Is that why
I invited you tonight?
Speaking of Brandywine Productions, by the time this goes out, we'll have seen Alien Covenant. And if you're listening to this next week, because we're recording it this week, you'll be able to.
No, we're recording this next week.
We've recorded this week, and it goes out next week. But when it goes out, you should also... We have retweeted the Prometheus and...
Alien 3.
Alien 3.
Commentaries.
Yeah. Although if this is out next week, then we've recorded this last week.
That's true. Yeah.
And actually, we haven't... It was last week we retweeted.
Yeah.
In the same way that between this and the next commentary...
Unless we retweet it next week.
We're going to do 4 more commentaries linking them.
Russell T. Davis got 2 series out of chat like this.
He did.
He did indeed.
And on that note... Bye,
everybody.
Pals.
Bye.
Hey-o.
Bye.